Hey, good old listeners. We took a break this week, so here is a totally uncut version of episode 59, including over 1 hour of bonus drunken rambling. I hope you enjoy it, or don't. I really don't care. Tonight's podcast is brought to you by this guy.
MaxForce 357.
Welcome back once again to this week's Good Old Gamers podcast. We're actually the Sad Old Gamers this week.
The Sad Old Gamers.
This is the Sad Old Gamers podcast. I'm Sad Lyle McClendon, and here with me today is Sad Brandon Gentry.
Go fuck yourself, David.
Thanks.
And speaking of which, we got two guests with us tonight. We got Bastard David.
Yep, the bitch is here.
You may remember him from... working at Vault, he was the guy that you would get sweet deals by calling a bitch.
Nobody really behalf. Done it.
Huh?
Nobody really done it.
I think one person did, didn't they?
I had two. That two. Was it.
That's even better. So we got David Leslie, former Vault employee, yep. Friend with us tonight. We also have back again, Mr. Chasen Chandler.
Thanks for having me back.
Indeed. We got a fun little / sad morning episode planned for you tonight.
Yep.
So...
little suicidal.
Yep. Gonna get out that Schlossberg here.
Yeah.
At the end of the evening.
Spent most of the night, morning with a NES sap recorder around my neck, giving myself the old autoerotic asphyxiation in the shower to get through the day.
Kung fu from the closet, huh?
Yep. How I start off all my mornings.
Well, you know, the news is pretty fucking depressing usually. So we're gonna start off with some news.
Three planes crashed today, and your mother was on all of them.
14 people killed in the streets of Libya for no reason.
They were all your mother.
Bummer. That's not even funny.
That probably happened.
Yep, sorry.
Damn. It's Konami's fault.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Konami. Kick it off with a little news anyways. The one thing I had that I wanted to say off bat, you know, I said the other night about Nintendo had announced that a codenamed HM or some shit, handheld.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty much like not something they're working on, they announced, but just like a future patent for accessories to the NX down the road.
Oh, boy.
I read that.
More gimmicks.
There always is. Pretty quick to just kind of say, oh, you know, we do this every once in a while. It shows up in the patent office and, you know, things don't happen. It's just something we try and get a hold of legally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Patents come and go, but they never come public a lot of the time, so.
I wish they'd just quit the gimmick shit. Just make a good console.
I just wish they would reveal something and stop just blowing all kinds of smoke.
They would do something with their patent on virtual insanity that they took from in Eternal Darkness. You know, I wish they would utilize that more because it was just in that one game. I would like to see some more, you know, crazy screw with your TV stuff like in that game.
Eternal Darkness is a game that me and Brandon Bill has urged me and Brandon to play, and neither one of it, or I haven't, you have, haven't you?
I emulated a little bit, but playing GameCube games with an Xbox 360 controller on PC is, it ain't the same.
I have a sealed copy of Eternal Darkness, if you guys have never played that, I'll crack it open and
don't
break the seal.
No. I only paid 30 for it.
That's like poking that holes in the condom, man. Yeah.
Just asking for
you just
it.
Don't do it.
I mean, it just depends. If you're dating a supermodel, you don't want to go nowhere.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It's like, I don't know what the fuck happened.
I've smoked so much crack, I thought I was shooting blanks. Sorry. Anyways, what you got, Brando?
At E3, Nintendo's having a hands-on demo of the new Zelda game.
I've seen that as well.
Users get 90 minutes alone with it.
Damn.
Yeah.
They would have a real sticky controller. Yeah. Like, I'm walking out of there like,
How long do you think this is going to keep going? And what I mean is, it seems to be the industry belief that E3 is unnecessary thanks to the internet in general. And, you know, Nintendo does the Nintendo Direct thing on their consoles. Nintendo's no longer renting out that giant-ass theater for their own press conference. Do you think they're going to keep doing this much longer?
I think they will always keep a somewhat of an E3 presence, but, like, for the most part, it's right. Like, E3 is just the way to advertise shit. Now the internet advertises shit to you when you're not even on there.
Well, you know, E3 was a big deal, of course, before the internet. I mean, that's what we're getting at. But, you know, like, actually remembering finding out your information in magazines, you know, like a month after the fucking news dropped, just because that's how limited you were to get your information. I don't know. Like, Nintendo is going to have to pull some big tricks out of the fucking bag this go around.
They've kind of worked themselves into the pickle over the last decade because they've let Xbox and PS4 or PlayStation become like the normal PC console.
The standard.
So they're like, well, we could do another console similar in power to them, but that market's pretty well flooded. So now they're having to work these gimmicks and they just got to get the right gimmick.
I think it's, you know, they have a people. Like, say, with the PlayStation 4, you had that guy who made Unraveled come out there and do a really awkward, but it was awkward in a good way, a personalized introduction to his project Unraveled. And he did it so heartfelt because, you know, it was really personal to him to make that game.
Yeah.
But then when Nintendo comes out there, it's kind of corporate. They don't look like gamers. It's just like people in a business polo and khakis and stuff, and you know, we've seen the Wii Music debacle of 2008, and they don't look like gamers. Do you think that might have something to do with it, that it doesn't look like somebody who plays the game out there? It looks like a company representative or something that goes out there.
That's pretty much.
You think the corporate presence is a little non-personal, non-gamer?
I think because Nintendo's corporate presence has been one thing that's kind of fucking shunned them to the point they're at. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
well, I know Nintendo's
a bitch to work for if you're a developer, pretty much. And, you know,
I know their copyright thick policies with videos has not done them any favors.
No, because they're already even talking about wanting to lay copyright claim to the fucking Minecraft, Super Mario Edition Minecraft on Wii U, like trying to keep people from posting fucking YouTube videos and then playing that and shit.
Considering starting a YouTube show, the fact that I'm, you know, considering not doing any Nintendo titles really scares me because they're such a strong presence in the game community. They always have been. They're legends. They
make great games. Nintendo, chances are, any gamer you meet that is especially catered to retro, NES is, and SNES, that's somewhere in the foundation.
Yeah. To be fair, you can do that weird deal thing on YouTube where they get a cut of your video if it's a Nintendo thing. But just because I'm really happy to play Mario Kart 8 on my Wii U and want to show people on my YouTube channel that, doesn't mean that I'm going to go through with that because it's just kind of a paperwork headache to give them a profit. It's not that I don't want to give them a share of their money, because even if they're asking for that, that's not too big of a deal, but to go through the headache of processing through all that, I think that,
and, you know,
that scares away a lot of YouTubers.
It's the fact that you're also essentially doing free advertising for them.
Right.
And they're trying to charge you for it, basically.
I'm not there to bash Mario Kart 8. It's a fantastic game. Like, so shouldn't they lax on that? It's not like I'm saying, here's Mario Party 10, and then I just, like, start ripping into it because it's Mario Party 10. Let's, I would understand that, I'm giving a positive review.
It's a really archaic and draconian business model.
Their business model is the same shit they had in the late fucking 80s when they were a powerhouse. And Nintendo just cannot admit the fact that they're not the dominant top dog.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, because
they really
Nintendo's
could
got
be,
a got a they
that's
could.
That's the shitty thing.
That's one
they
thing
really
I'm,
could be.
I'm kinda the new president of Nintendo. I kinda have a little hope for this guy. Just a little bit, because he's already stated, you know, we gotta go back to what the gamers want. And, you know, it's one thing to build a fucking family oriented console like the Wii for families, and it's one thing to have a gaming console, you know, that you got mature titles on, you don't have tons of shovelware and shit on, you know, and that's just one thing they've got to admit. Like,
I mean,
you got to cater to the crowd.
Yeah, they made Eternal Darkness again, and Bayonetta 2 is super popular and definitely M-rated. It's, you know, mildly sexual and super violent. And
I just feel the Wii U as a whole, the Wii U has been mishandled, because the Wii U is a fantastic piece of hardware, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I love the Wii U.
Awesome, even third-party games with Ubisoft's... I get it's a little divided, but it's still a good game in my opinion. And according to the ratings, it's a little above average. Zombie U.
For like a $5 game, you can't beat it.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
And again, you know, the popular Bayonetta 2 and stuff like that. So if it, and they have Nintendo exclusive skins and stuff in the game. So if they've already were to give, you know, Samus and Star Fox skins and stuff, and that one R-Wing usage of the aircraft in the game. If they're willing to play with their Nintendo properties in an M-rated game, then for one game, why can't they branch out and do it with other games? Why is it just that one title? Why can't they just embrace that we play more violent stuff? That stuff's no longer controversial like it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
That's the atmosphere it is now. You know, kids play M-rated Call of Duty games with torture scenes in it and stuff like that. Like, can we just...
I think
get on board
we need
and realize
to call,
we're mature gamers
we need
now?
To call Nintendo HQ and tell them, like, the Night Trap controversy is over.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my point. You know,
end it.
That's no longer the issue. That's no longer the controversy within the game industry. We have a different controversy, and it's not violence and sexuality anymore. So I think they really should lax up on that and embrace that with their console. Because you're right, the games are good on the console. The console's good. They suffered from a shit launch. That was their launch.
They didn't really start pumping out the quality shit until, you know, we're getting near the end of the lifespan.
Yeah, I was
already,
the Wii U didn't
become
a really good buy until the end of the lifespan.
When did Smash Brothers for the Wii U come out? Like a year after the console's launch?
Two, I think.
Oh my god!
It was.
It's good.
May have been. It was a year or two. It was one of those, but.
Splatoon is amazing.
Splatoon's great. Super Mario Maker, the killer app for the Wii U, released near the end.
You know, they've bungled that up.
Oh yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, with the
I've heard more
about the deleted levels and stuff.
The way that if your level doesn't happen to get all the popular votes, it just goes away.
It's pretty much pushed to the fucking side.
Yeah, that's horseshit.
I guess they put their money in everything, but a massive server to hold all those levels. So.
Yeah, I don't see it being that huge of a deal, because them levels can't be that big. Because it's not like they're having to hold the graphics and stuff.
I don't think it's just a technical issue. I think it's that, you know, like they have in the past, they've not really beefed up their online content because they're behind. You know, when it comes to Xbox, their online service is on point. You know, their PlayStation as well. But when it comes to online stuff with Nintendo anything, I think they're still behind. So maybe that's the issue with the
Mario Maker
stuff.
And I think they also...
They just don't know how to do online
They try
stuff.
To overcorrect their issue of having way too many, like, this crap levels in the first things you see when you're browsing. So they overcorrect it for that, except for the fact that it didn't correct it at all, because the first levels you see when you browse through is all shitty music levels.
That's the only stuff
that gets votes.
Is that their fault or is that the fans' fault? Because
do
they not have like
a
featured
combined
popular section?
Yeah, I mean,
if they would allow,
because I know this already, it's only maybe a little over a week old Doom and stuff like that. Whenever I pop on Doom for PS4, it's fantastic as far as the community. The community portal is for the snap maps. They have the feature, they have the popular. You never see the crappy levels, ever. The crappy levels are so far down. You have to search with the code. When you make a snap map in Doom, you get a code and you share it with your friends and stuff like that. Unless you have one of those and you see your friend's crappy level because they gave you the code to find it, you're not going to see the crappy stuff out there on the
dashboard.
You're going
to see the better shit that everybody wants to play.
So is it that way? Because I haven't really played...
It's twofold. Because
I've not been playing Mario Maker.
The community loves these shitty music levels. I mean, they're cool. I'll give
it that.
They're
creative,
because
you put
a lot of damn time to pull those off.
I just
off.
Didn't know if that was Nintendo's fault
but
or was the fans' fault.
It's both.
Because,
okay. Like I said, those are cool, and for whatever reason, those are the only ones you get a vote. You put a hard Mario level on there, unless you're a popular YouTuber or something, it's getting shit voted, because people don't like hard levels.
See what kind of...
Yeah, exactly.
But Nintendo, they should add, like, a...
categories so that people could tag their, hey, this is a music level. And when I'm browsing, I can say, fuck music levels. I
don't
see one.
That?
No.
Because again, I haven't played
not
Mario
categorized
Maker
at all.
As far as the online content
one
goes.
One thing that honestly scares me about the company itself, Nintendo, they do have a business presence when it comes to their everything they do, no matter what the fuck it is.
That's a shame.
Here's the thing that kills me, and I can see it, but I don't want to, is I'm afraid they're going to wind up like Sega did. They're going to end up fucking shit in the bed and having to make games for other consoles.
Oh, yeah. I can see that easily, seeing Mario on the Xbox or
just
PlayStation.
The fact that they've entertained the mobile market with, what is it, Miitomo?
Yeah.
That scares me.
The most shitty and annoying app on my phone.
I'm going to see... Horrible. I'm afraid they're going to see that as profitable and less problematic to maintain, and then they're going to, you know, let everything else go by the wayside that
very
made themselves
possible.
Popular in the first
the
place.
The mobile market is very easy to please.
See, part of the thing that kills me with it, it's like, I don't want to see that company go that way because us, as adults now, looking back on it, we all grew up playing the shit. It was Nintendo or Super Nintendo.
Yeah. You're going to be playing Nintendo pachinko machines before this shit's over.
Oh, God.
Speaking of which, my little news bit that I want to talk about very briefly is Konami. You know how they put out I don't know if you know or not, but they put out a little survey about which Konami old school property that you would like to see brought back?
I did not know that.
They put this online a little while ago, and it was, man, maybe like 16 games. And it was some obscure stuff. But some of the other things that stood out were like Rocket Knight, Castlevania. I don't know why they call that retro because they've just did some recent Castlevania games. But they did, you know, Rocket Knight's a little retro aside from that reboot they did a little while ago. Sunset Riders, they even talked about that as, you know, something to vote for seeing brought back. And the thing that got the most votes and was Contra, of course, because that's a great
that's
game series.
A staple of Konami. Mm-hmm.
I personally would have liked to see Sunset Riders come back, and you know, maybe it still will, but the one that got the most votes is Contra. So, the news bit to talk about is Konami just announced that they are going to bring back Contra. And I'm like, okay, sweet. Oh, wait, you guys said you're done with AAA titles and console games and stuff like that. You're focusing, like everybody knows,
you have a mobile market
pachinko games, like they just did a pachinko Silent Hill. I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video for that. It is.
It's happening.
It's the most awful thing. Look up the Silent Hill pachinko on YouTube. It's sad to see that that's the new thing that they've done with Silent Hill, especially since we saw the wonderful PT and the fact that it unfortunately got canceled. So what are they bringing back? It thankfully isn't pachinko, but the other thing they said they were going to focus on aside from pachinko is mobile games. The mobile title that they're bringing back, according to one of the retro franchises that they voted on, is a mobile Contra game. That's the newest thing that Konami's going to do is a mobile Contra game. And before anybody gets excited about that, there is Contra 4 Redux, Redo, or however you pronounce it.
I think it's Redux.
There's a Contra 4 Redux on Android. I don't know if it's on Apple or not. I have two phones. I have an Apple work phone, and I have an Android phone from me personally.
So basically, you have one phone.
I use both pretty much the same amount. I have Contra 4 Redux on my Android phone, and I can't tell you how abysmal that is. I've seen Contra 4 ROM hacks that were, you know, 25 times better than that official Konami release. Mm-hmm. Download Contra 4 mm-hmm. Redux.
Sorry.
Go ahead and download Contra 4 Redux on the on your Android phone, and oh my god, and experience the complete hell and bullshit that is.
I can see the new Contra they're going to do is going to be one of those runner games, and you just like tap where you want to shoot.
Well, the when the Android tablets really first hit the marketplace, they did do one, and guess what? It was amazing. But you know how they decided to make it shitty? The very first patch update. Oh shit! The very first patch update. They, I played it, and a lot of people in the reviews mentioned this too, so, you know, this isn't my own personal account, this is, like, the consensus of internet users who have this Contra Runner game on their, Android tablet, is you're running, and so you're like, okay, patch update, great, and, you know, you start the game and you're running, and you go to attack the first enemy, and you can't, and you're like, what the fuck's going on, and you get shot and you die, and you're like, what happened? Why is my fire button not working? You're running with no weapons. And even with your standard pea shooter that has unlimited ammo, I mean, you don't have ammo when you switch to spread and stuff in the old games, but you have to pay for your default P-Shirt weapon.
That's fucking stupid.
Uh-huh. Damn.
And people blasted them in the comments for that. And as well they should. So I'm afraid that, you know, with that issue aside from that Contra game on the tablet and what they plan to do with mobile and pachinko, that this new Contra game that they plan for the mobile market is going to be similarly crappy. And even if it is, you know, wonderful as Contra Rebirth for WiiWare on the original Wii, I'm afraid that they're going to, you know, make you pay for spread to drop one of those item balloons or something like that.
God.
I'm
to win with pachinko coins.
I'm real afraid what they're going to do. And even if it is a perfect Contra game, you know what's going to be bad about it? That it's on a mobile phone. Mm-hmm. Because playing the aforementioned Contra 4 Redux that I bought for my Android tablet, the controls are awful. Because you can't make a side-scrolling thing work like that unless you have one of those, what is it, Mubo? I can't remember, but it's a Bluetooth controller for your phone. Yeah. But unless you're like hardcore gaming on your phone, and not many people do, and have one of those Bluetooth controllers, you're not going to make those controls work. No. At least not from what I've seen with Contra 4 Redux. Any sort of platforming
is miserable on the phone. Yeah. That's why I don't emulate shit on my phone. I tried it, and I was like, yeah, fuck this.
You can emulate maybe JRPGs and puzzle games, but as far as platformers, running guns, beat 'em ups, no. That does not work. I have great SNES emulators emulator on my phone to play Super Nintendo games, and I stay away from some of my favorite games just because the controls can't work. You can't play Mario World on your phone and expect to be as awesome as you are with a Super Nintendo controller.
That's one reason everybody was raising so much hell when, you know, they were thinking, oh, the new Nintendo controller is going to be all touch interface.
I'm glad that was a rumor.
That would have been a death stroke, in my opinion. Because that was the single most argument I used against them. Like, have you tried playing a fucking game on your phone? Like,
I fucking hate touchscreens. That's one of the reasons.
Play Dr. Mario on my phone or Pokemon on my phone. Yeah. But I cannot play Mortal Kombat 2 for Super Nintendo. No. I cannot play Contra 3 Alien Wars on Super Nintendo.
I hate touchscreens for any use. Like, I really fucking dislike them. That's one of the reasons I hate Apple so much, because their product like almost made that the industry standard. I miss my old phone with a QWERTY keypad. I could play fucking Quake on that phone if I wanted to.
Jesus, that would be awesome. I love Quake.
But everything's fucking smudgy, inaccurate touchpads now.
Mm.
Fucking hate it.
Yeah.
You mentioning Quake makes me want to say another news bit I had.
Does it make your legs quake?
It could. It's
Is there a new Quake?
It's clearly rumor right now, but a couple of the big wigs at ID Software have been talking when they were showing off Doom on release, and that's their supposedly the next big goal is they want to resurrect Quake.
Oh, nice.
Even if they just remaster the first one, I will throw down. Hey, are you listening, Bethesda? I will throw down $130 or so on a collector's edition if you at least remaster Quake 1. Do you hear me? Okay. You don't even have to try and make a new Quake game. Glad you're listening, Mr. Bethesda.
Bet you Bethesda really likes us.
Oh, yeah. If you are indeed not remastering Quake 1 or even 2, I think Quake 2 on the bonus disc for the Xbox 360 port of Quake 4 was good enough. It made me buy a 360. I bought a 360 just because I knew Quake 4 came with the bonus disc and had Quake 2 on it, and it's an awesome port. Nice. And it's freaking fantastic. It's almost better than the PC version.
I love the Quake games, but we'll say, just throw this out there, Quake 3 Arena for Sega Dreamcast made me want to throw my Dreamcast out of the window.
I used to play that and think it was awesome because it had blistering 56K.
Yeah.
60K modem. I eventually had to switch to the Dreamcast keyboard and mouse because
that controller
just wrecks. I made it work for a while, and then I was like, fuck it. And I'm glad I had the keyboard to begin with, because I had Typing of the Dead.
Controllers are horrible for shooters anyways, but one analog stick for a shooter is way worse. Yeah.
Right. And that's how I had to play Duke Nukem on the 64, was with one analog, and then the all the C buttons as a second analog.
It's like anything, even like GoldenEye now. I used to, I ain't gonna lie, I used to flaunt my GoldenEye skills. You would not want me on your fucking team nowadays.
No.
I'm lucky if I can fucking shoot the wall. Like, yeah. I'm so terrible at that game now. Like, especially like playing the newer shooters, you know, that are more fast paced and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking overkill for me. What else you got?
Street Fighter 2 mystery's been solved. Or rather,
I've seen some about this.
Not so much solved as it is Capcom has decided.
It's the dude punching the other guy at the beginning of the game.
The intro screen to... I don't think it was on the Super Nintendo version. It was on the Genesis version of Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition. But in the arcades, of course, you saw it.
So, it's a black guy and a white guy fighting, and they are...
And, of course, the black guy gets punched in the face.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't win.
Way to go, Capcom.
Yeah.
It's Max and Scott, respectively, the black and white guy.
Max and Scott.
Yep.
Oh, Scott. Okay, I knew that.
And they got some backgrounds that you can dig up. I didn't care enough to bring them in, because... From what I saw, it's rumored that it's very unlikely to see them as actual playable characters in the future, but they might make it into the story.
I think
it's just really Capcom that's looking for some free press, but like, hey, let's just give these douchebags some background. And
I'm one of those giant nerds that actually knows the incomplete mythology of Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter when it's just supposed to be like, fuck the story, fight, you know, beat your friends in the face on their couch with another controller. I actually know the full story of all the games for Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat because I love them so much. That being said, who the fuck are Max and Scott?
It's probably
They have names. I'm glad that they're like characters instead of just an intro screen, but Max and Scott?
Some attempt. Now Capcom's going to announce next week. They're like, break out your Sega X bands and your 28.8 modem.
Is that gonna
got DLC coming for Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition. It's retro DLC.
You can now download
Max and Scott for $25.
Are they going to work them into Street Fighter 5 or something? For another patch update? Because they're adding characters and shit to that because it had such a bad release.
It's unlikely that there'll be anything real, like any DLC characters. But, you know, that's just rumors, so it could be wrong.
Well, maybe they'll go through now and start giving all the people in the backgrounds names.
That's what I was going to say.
One guy in the Blanca level, when Blanca wins, he's got that fucking crate, and he just goes...
If they're going to go that way, I want to know the story behind that giant snake on the tree in Blanca's level. What is the deal with that? It is intimidating looking. He looks like I'd have more of a time fighting him than Blanca, you know?
Yeah. Whoa. Give the anaconda in the tree's name's Ice Cube, respectively.
Yes.
After the greatest anaconda movie ever made.
I want to know what the NPC owner of the car you beat up, what they did to piss off the player.
That was a Shadaloo car.
I always loved the two background characters in Street Fighter 2. In the Guile level, where the guy's sitting on that crate and he looks like he's jerking off. You know?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. And the guy in Zangief's level, where he's just like throwing back that bottle of presumably vodka. You know, he's just like... The Zangief's like sticking some dude's face between his thighs, and he's like, I don't care. Whoa, I'm drinking over here.
You hearing this shit, Zangief? That's all you're fucking good for. Rough time.
I want to know why that guy's like, you know, he's come to a point in his life where he's not even interested in this giant street fight in what looks like a steel mill or something in the USSR. He's just like, I can't be bothered to watch two dudes duke it out in my workplace. I'm just going to be drinking in my workplace, you know? This giant bottle of vodka.
They encourage that in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
Production.
This is how you earn Employee of the Month.
Production is up when you swig back a bottle of vodka.
They must have been guarding something important. You know, the old saying is they guarded potato shacks more than they guarded the nuclear reactor fuel.
I guess all you Street Fighter nerds out there are going to have to look for Scott and Max through all those Udon manga novels and stuff like that and see if you can spot them in there.
It's going to be like, where's Waldo Street Fighter Edition?
Where's Max and Scott?
So which one's Scott and Max?
Max is a black guy.
Okay.
Scott's a white. Cool.
All right.
It's good to know. Thank you, Capcom.
Yeah.
Now, if you can only make a decent game, we might give a fuck more about your characters. Make a good Mega Man game if you're listening, please.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. Keiji Inafune is out. Mighty Number 9 now.
How people are pissed off about that.
Yeah.
As somebody who's part of that Kickstarter, whose name is in the credits of that game, and who's beta tested that game on Steam a while, to see that trailer, That is indeed not what we were promised. I'm not as angry as everybody else, but I can say they are right to say that that is a complete like change
misdirect
from what we've been seeing and playing. That is not what we've been playing. I think it'll be okay, but yeah, not what we're promised.
See, our returning guest, Steve Steverson, he will like this news. Actually, Steve, it's going to be a little too late by the time you hear it. If you sign up for the Pokemon Trainer Club by June 1st, you get a few free Mew. But since this is going to be published like June 2nd, sucks to be you, Steve.
I'm sorry, Steve. He's probably sad as fuck right now. Or he will be. He's actually not sad at all right now.
But he will be.
He
That's
will
what
be.
Matters.
Yeah.
All right. News bit. I have two or three good ones. Let's give a quick shout out before I get into my news segments. Today is the 1 year anniversary of the film Kung Fury.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Kung
shit.
Fury is awesome.
It's been that long.
It's 1 year today. If you guys somehow still have not seen that on, it's free on YouTube and it's only 30 minutes of your time. Like, go watch
what
that.
What the fuck
it's
are
amazing.
You doing with your life?
Yeah.
Watch it once and then watch it again while masturbating.
Yeah.
Or masturbate during both. I don't care. This is almost, you get that in there.
If you masturbate at midnight while watching Kung Fury, you too will be struck by lightning and bitten by a cobra.
Yeah. I can only hope. Start okay. experimenting tonight
for the, three news bits I got. The World of Warcraft movie has a stunning 40% at the moment on Rotten Tomatoes.
No fucking kidding.
Yeah, somehow I think it's poised to sell like, what, 30 million or something like that?
What was its
budget of like fucking yeah. 80?
I don't recall.
Like
yeah. Or maybe it opened with 30. I'm not sure. I remember it was like kind of surprising what the numbers it was getting.
Yeah. I'm curious.
I know why, because all the fucking assholes that play that shit are going out to buy anything with that fucking World of Warcraft's name on it.
I don't care if it's a shitty movie. I want to know if it's faithful to the original Warcraft or if they just stuck a bunch of World of Warcraft crap in it to capitalize on the popularity of what most people know of Warcraft. Kind of like how Doom was supposed to be based off the original Doom, but it had a lot of Doom 3 elements in it because that was the popular game at the time.
Yeah.
So because World of Warcraft's popular, I wonder if this is indeed a Warcraft movie or if it's a World of Warcraft pseudo Warcraft movie.
$25 million for U.S. opening and projected $30 million for overseas opening.
Okay,
and that's not good.
No,
usually, even a bomb movie usually that releases in U.S. has more success usually internationally.
When a studio sees the box office tank, then they just kind of pray for DVD sales. So they better start releasing some collector's Blu-rays.
Oh yeah,
crap. You know
they'll have to recoup the collector's cost. Blu-ray with like all the World of Warcraft expansions and some figures and bullshit.
Oh, fuck yeah,
they better. They're gonna suffer a huge financial loss. I'm not surprised.
I'm glad.
This is crap. I'm not surprised.
Let me ask a question. Who was the studio that made Warcraft?
Oh, I have Someone no shitty. Idea of what company made this movie.
I want to say it's a company I like.
Boner Factor?
I think it's Legendary.
That now, Boner Factor made Warcraft.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And Warcraft. Ghostbusters. Anyways, the reason I was trying to find out who made the Warcraft movies, I was hoping to fuck the company that's making Ghostbusters made Warcraft so I could just shit on both of them at the same time.
You know, I have a good relationship with Boner Factory Films, and I have a cameo in the new Ghostbusters film. I'm Slimer's brother, Splooger.
All over Melissa McCarthy. Mm-hmm. All over.
Now, I don't have any speaking roles per se, but I spent a lot of time in that recording booth just kind of go.
know? They gave me $20 and told me to slap my meat around.
Yep.
As a stunt cock.
That's about the story of it.
That would awesome. Be the greatest. Oh, like, are you a stunt man? Even better, I'm a stunt cock. The actor's too afraid to put his cock on camera.
I love that that's a real thing. That that's an occupation in real life.
Yep.
Now I know I'm living.
Body doubles, man.
I really wish it was more like how you would picture it in your mind. Like, you think it'd be like a stuntman, like they set your dick on fire and stuff. That'd be way more entertaining.
Damn, what kind of porn was that?
I don't know. It needs to happen.
It's just like your dick on this side, the explosion happens, ooh. It just goes the other side. It's like fucking shitty Michael Bay boom bass drop.
Oh, I got to make that happen. I'm gonna go put myself in the industry now. Put my resume. My name is gonna be Tommy Salami. Look nice. Me up on Twitter. Other thing I had news is Shadow of the Eternals, the spiritual successor to Eternal Darkness, is according to Dennis Dyack, actually still in development, even though their Kickstarter he pulled it because he claimed to have gotten financing elsewhere, didn't any Kickstarter anymore, which disappointed some Kickstarter fans such as Noah Antweiler, the Spoonie one from the Spoonie Experiment, and of many others. He's just the notable one that comes to my mind at the moment. I myself am an Eternal Darkness fan, like I discussed at the beginning of the podcast, so to see this back in development kind of gives me hope, but I hope he's not jerking me off, because this is Dennis Dyack we're talking about. His company went under, especially with maybe with the lawsuit of stealing propriety parts of the engine code with the Unreal Engine for X-Men Destiny and a couple other games that they had to pull from the retail market because it was part of the lawsuit that they had that code within the game. And because he's Dennis Dyack, he made a lot of promises with... what was that game that came out for the 360? It was an RPG. It was kind of cyberpunk, but it had a lot of Norse mythology in it. It started with a T.
David, you work in the game store. You should know this. Worked.
Guys,
this is why you no longer work.
It's got stores. The cover of the game has a...
What an asshole.
I'm playing. I don't care.
The cover of the game has a guy's face in shadow, and he has like blue Tron lines glowing in his face and stuff. It was a total disappointment. Kind of like Duke Nukem Forever, you know, development hell forever, and it just totally disappointed. And I can't remember the name of the game. Starts with a T right now. Anyways, look up Dennis Dyack, and you'll... on Wikipedia or something,
I think,
and you'll
I see know what game you're that talking is. About.
Yeah. On the tip of my brain.
So that game. I know everyone knows that game.
Well, whatever the name of the game is, it was a complete disappointment, and I'm afraid that he's going to make more promises that is write checks that his ass can't cash with Shadow of the Eternals, because we got a lot more fan base behind this because Eternal Darkness was wonderful. So, he's got a lot riding on him.
I really gotta play Eternal Darkness.
I just missed that whole GameCube train.
You must. I did too.
There was a lot of good games on GameCube.
I was riding the Dreamcast train into Oblivion when the GameCube was out.
The GameCube had a few exclusive titles that make the console worth buying. Let me tell you.
Brandon and they're just like, oh, this looks cool. Fuck it.
Mario Kart
2 Human?
Two Human. That's it. Yeah, 2 Human was a 10-year development. It was supposed to be a PS2 title.
He was with Silicon Knights. And it came out in the
360. Yes, Silicon Knights is the company that went under the X-Men Destiny lawsuit.
That sucks, because Silicon Knights were they were behind Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes on GameCube.
Yes.
Which is one of the greatest remakes of all time,
yes,
in my opinion.
Next to Resident Evil or something.
Yeah,
I don't think anything else could closely match Twin Snakes. But, of course, you know, there's other controversies plaguing the company with one of the bigwigs being involved with having child porn in his possession.
Oh, goddamn.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
It was not Dennis Dyack. Jesus Christ.
Shit.
And this is the last podcast we're doing tonight.
That was the final episode, folks. That's why we're sad. Bye.
This is why I was on here. The last one.
Yeah, you're a patty.
Yeah. David's the one that actually said that just then. You sick fuck.
You had a copy of the guy game, didn't you?
The guy game?
Yeah. Dude, you know, that's child porn, right?
Those motherfuckers got some trouble over that shit.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad for them because it's not their fault.
Girl, you know, had a fake ID. Really bad. I had a copy of that game, and I got rid of it.
I did, like, too. I'm scared to own it.
Game.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. It's worth that.
It's worth a lot. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the few games that shows, you know, live-action nudity instead of, you know, pixelated crap.
Good God.
But, yeah, that 21-year-old turned out to be a 17-year-old because she was at the bar with a fake license because she wanted a drink.
You have a child porn game if you have that.
Yep.
I've got
if you have the guy game, earn it.
I have Shower With Your Dad Simulator. That's almost there. Shower With Your Dad. That's a great game.
I almost downloaded that the other day. I did see it passing through.
What was that game from Game Jam where it had Minecraft graphics, but you were first person shooting blue towels at... Whoa.
My dog is upset. Hold on.
What's we at?
We were just talking. We were wrapping up news. Yeah. We had to pause for a minute because my dog wants to make sweet love to Brandon.
Yeah.
Anyways, the game I was talking about from Game Jam, look it up on YouTube. You're Minecraft graphics, first-person shooter, but you're shooting towels at a bunch of naked guys in a locker room. And you're trying to put towels on them because they're chasing you, like horde mode or something, like zombies or something. I don't know what they're going to do to you. I really don't want to know what they're going to do to you, but you can give them towels to towel off so they'll leave you the fuck alone.
They're going to dong that face up pretty good.
Markiplier played it, so I'm sure it'll be easy to find on YouTube search if you look for it.
Nice.
Last thing I had for my news personally is...
I think you might have lost the sweet spot on your mic. It sounds a little...
This is better.
There you go.
There.
Yeah. Get in the G-spot again.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, this one's not really news, but it's something I wanted to bring up because PS4 has been putting PS2 games for a little while now on the PS4's digital downloads on the PlayStation Network. So, you know, no big news, and I'm sure there's not a lot of fans for it, but it's one of my top five underrated games that I cannot keep, you know, I couldn't promote more. I love the shit out of it. There's a handful of underrated games that I always tell retro gamers about that they need to play. And one of them is Kinetica, which was a launch title and very much a tech demo for PS2. Well, that just came onto the marketplace on PS4 this week or last week. And so yeah, it's not actually a news story, but my god, Kinetica's on PS4 now. You don't have to hunt down a PS2. Please play it. This game is amazing. It's one of those futuristic racers that isn't a ripoff of Wipeout or F-Zero. It's completely original. You are like all these... You're actually like sexy chicks, like hot rod girls and stuff like that. Like you've got the leather, you know, booty shorts like I like to wear to the podcast.
It's always a sexy time around here.
We may have to bring that up on episode 69. We're going to do a sexy episode for that one.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have to get video for that one.
Yeah, we are.
Check us
out. Squishy old gamers.
Anyways, it's, you know, like,
good old
like girls you would see in Hot Rod Magazine. And they put on these suits, I guess like Iron Man or something, but it turns them into like half human, half motorcycle. Their boots and their gloves have wheels on them. And because they're limber, sexy women, and they can do stunts with their gymnastic and yoga poses to do handstands and stuff while they're flying down the track at like, you know, a jillion kilometers an hour, like F-Zero machines, or because that's what they refer to them
bunch of
as in the game as machines instead of cars or hovercrafts. They call them machines if you ever play F-Zero. But yeah, so they're wearing these motorcycle suits, all these sexy girls, and like in F-Zero GX, they're riding up the side of skyscrapers and through loop-de-loops and corkscrews and inside tubes and the outside of tubes and up ramps. Like they even have this one track that's kind of like a space station on the outside of the orbit of Earth, but a lot of it is on Earth. It's just super futuristic, and I just thought that was pretty cool that to gain speed boosts instead of hitting a speed jump or ramp or something like that in the game, you can just do a handstand or a flip or a cartwheel or
nice.
Or like do this yoga pose and stuff, but like have, you know, two boots and one of your hands wheels on the ground to gain speed. It's really cool. And since it came out in, I believe, 2000 or 2001, it's got a lot of that late 90s techno in it. Amoeba Assassin, Meeker, Juno Reactor from... Juno Reactor's famous for people that weren't into the 90s nightclub scene with all the raves and stuff, for a lot of movie soundtracks, most notably all the Matrix films Juno Reactor did music for. So it's got a fan-fucking-tastic soundtrack. And the speed is unmatched. If you're a real fan of Wipeout or F-Zero, you gotta play Kinetica. And now you don't have to hunt down a retro copy off eBay. You can get it on PS4 as a very cheap download. I believe it's either... Yeah, it's $10, $9.99. Nice. And it's got trophies in it and stuff for all you trophy and achievement hunters. So play it. It's fantastic racing, good sense of speed, cool tracks, Very futuristic. Like I said, that nice thumping soundtrack. You can't be disappointed.
Nice. So,
I was just happy to see that while I was on my PS4 lately, so I had to plug that. It's a good retro game. So
hell yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Connecticut is amazing.
That wraps us up for news.
I do believe so.
Well, now, since I'm not doing well, I am. Technically, it's Arcade Arcana. Comes part three of the road to Southern Fried Game Room Expo.
Looking forward to it.
2016. I figured since we've already covered about the event, and we, you know, last week we went over the schedule pretty much, we could just talk this evening about our expectations and what we hope happens this year and reflect on last year's Southern Fried Game Room Expo a bit. If you'd like to hear more, you should listen to the Scootening.
Yeah. Well, I expect there to be arcade games there. I hope there's going to be arcade games there. And last year there was arcade games there, so that's all on me.
I hope Pachinko has taken over this year.
Oh, yeah. It's Konami's Silent Hill Pachinko.
I'm most excited. I think one of the things I'm super excited for, I'm definitely getting in on that Ghostbusters one ball pinball tournament. I don't give a fuck if I drop the ball after, like, three or four flips.
Incoming.
That's a bag of Taco Bell.
All right.
Thank you. Keep watch our crazy dog and make him leave us alone. But anywho, sorry. I can edit all that out.
I don't care.
It don't matter. Anyways, Sky Curse is going to be there.
Oh, I love. Big fan.
That's I'm pretty excited about that.
Look up Sky Cursor on Facebook.
They're having Stern's bringing a bunch of new pinball machines this year, mm-hmm. too.
Really?
I really hope Billy's going to be back. Billy Mitchell.
That's one thing I'm hoping for.
It doesn't list it, so I doubt he's going to be there. They'd put that on the website if he was. But I really just I want to go get some tips from him on Burger Time.
I love Burger Time so much and all its sequels. Super Burger Time Deluxe, Peter Pepper's Ice Cream Factory.
One of the most amazing moments for me and Brandon last year was, you know, we did meet. But in one of the cool things, we've actually become friends pretty much with Joel West. Like, he likes what we're doing, and he always, if we ever need him for anything, you know, he's always got a minute. And we were in shock and awe. You know, of course, because it's Billy fucking Mitchell.
Right.
And, you know, that whole thing proceeds around him where you're just like, oh, it's Billy Mitchell. He's a dickhead. I would love to meet
Billy Mitchell.
He's one of the coolest people that we met, but it was kind of surreal. Me and Brandon were just, you know, pretty much bullshitting with him, talking. And they had a little cabaret Pac-Man machine next to the hot sauce table.
Nice.
And he just starts showing me and Brandon these.
He brought his hot sauce?
Oh yeah,
Brandon, that's cool.
We ate some hot sauce.
You got a signed bottle?
I do.
You do?
Brandon.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got Walter Day and Billy Mitchell to sign it. I just need to get Steve Wiebe on there.
Oh,
yeah.
That's really cool. My
King of Kong poster. I didn't, but I ate some hot sauce. Brandon bought a bottle to get signed and a bottle to eat. And
hot sauce was good.
We drowned some motherfucking pizza.
Yeah, I hear it is. Billy knows what he's doing there.
But it's just really weird having him show you tips on Pac-Man, like showing you the trick where you can park Pac-Man in the corner, and he's like, you can walk away for 2 days and come back and those ghosts
I learned that from him. I never met the man himself, but I saw that on the internet. Yeah.
Just having somebody of that caliber tell you shit is kind of, it's a little bit mind-blowing.
If you guys haven't figured out, or if you're listening to the podcast for the first time, or you haven't really noticed on the internet, as amazing as the King of Kong is, A Fistful of Quarters, the documentary, Billy's not the villain that he is. You know,
Brandon sums really it up good perfectly. With
he's a great guy.
His analogy.
He's got a pro wrestler persona.
Perfect.
Exactly. He did kind of play a heel for that documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's going with it. He's marketing it. He knows how to, you know, it makes him a buck, and I can't blame him for that. So,
yeah.
Man, he's not a dick to you.
No.
He just has that.
If you guys still think that because of that documentary, like, you're a little behind. Get with the program. He's a cool dude.
Yeah. He's you can tell he's extremely confident, and I don't blame him, but
he's got skills like that, I had a record for the first
perfect Pac-Man game, you know?
Yeah, he's just got that aura about him, like, you don't fuck with this guy. And not, it helps that he's like 6'5" or some shit, you know?
Yeah, he's a very, very tall guy. But also, you know, he really is successful with his restaurant and the hot sauce and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, with his business persona outside of gaming, he's still got reason to boast and beat his chest. So.
Well, that was one cool thing about it, because, you know, we sit and talked with him for about 30 minutes at one point, and we were talking to him about, you know, well, it's cool that you're not the dick everybody says you are, pretty much. And we proceeded to tell him, because last year's Southern Fried Expo, that week, we got our first hate mail ever.
Yeah.
From Jizz Wizard.
BlizzKid 1998.
Whatever.
Wait, the podcast guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got hate mail from this guy. That was...
it's a couple episodes after I shit-talked World of Warcraft.
Yeah, this is a email from a kid. Fan.
Email's name was like BlizzKid 1998.
Oh, so he was a fan of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and he ripped into me and Brandon really hard. It was hilarious. That's where the scootening come about at, because he pretty much said if he seen our fat asses on the fat people's scooter at Walmart, he was going to push us off.
That's the funniest threat ever.
And like, it just all come together and culminated to that. But we were telling Billy Mitchell about, you know, well, we were received our first hate mail, and this is what it entailed. And he pretty much was like, well, shook our hands and was like, you're doing something right.
Yeah.
He was like, when you're pissing people off, that means they're taking notice and you're doing something right.
Look, Warcraft fans, I mean, yeah, the game's great. It's not my type of game. I don't like to play Warcraft, but you guys, from what I've heard of Warcraft or World of Warcraft, it's not what it used to be, you know? That's why they had that fan server that recently got shut down and stuff, because they've updated it to the point where a lot of old school fans don't like it anymore. And that's all I know about World of Warcraft, because it's not my bag.
I know it. I mean, I'm not, like, super familiar.
I know you hear this noise a lot.
Oh, fucking.
I've played MMOs since Ultima Online.
It's like Diablo all over again.
So I like MMOs, but World of Warcraft, I try to get into it, because, like, when World of Warcraft was new, like, all my friends who I played games with were like, we're playing World of Warcraft now. You play with us. So I bought the game. I played like 2 months. I've tried to like it so hard, but I could not.
Because it's super popular. Then, you don't want to be the... If you're such a good gamer, you don't want to be the one who's not playing the popular game. So you give it a try. And you kind of feel like a bastard for not liking something that's popular sometimes.
And then the first expansion came out. Like, I quit 2 months into it. Then years later, the first expansion came out. The Burning Crusade, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My friends are like, it's way better. It's way better. Come back and try it. So I got the expansion, came back and tried it. And then the first week, I was like... No, this game sucks. And then that happened again with later expansions. I'm like, dude, unless when I get to the end level, the end game, World of Warcraft, and it uninstalls itself and installs a good game, I'm not going to like this game.
So,
it's just because, like, I started with Ultima Online, and that's like the ultimate sandbox game.
Yeah.
Because I could, you know, in Ultima Online, you could be a guard for your own player-run cities, or you could be an asshole PK going around and killing people. You can go on treasure hunts. You can do fucking whatever you want.
You can be a fucking drunkard and lay around.
You can. Or you could be an asshole and go into town and poison some bread and lay it on the ground and watch some noob eat it and follow them and loot their body when they die from the poison.
The fucking best. That right there is why you need to buy the game.
That sounded like somebody's done that before.
Maybe. you could maybe follow somebody into their house and stab them and take the key and then take everything they own. I mean, not that I've done
anything. Assume their identity, if you will.
To get off into a side tangent, but stay on topic at the same time. You know, I have, since I'm a serious gamer in my own personal belief, I try and play all types of games. But, you know, all of us gamers, we try and We try and play all types of games, but we just have those genres that we stick to. You know, we like certain types of games, and for me, the MMO thing was never my thing. The only one I ever got into, which has since been shut down, is The Matrix Online. And the only reason I got into that was because I was a Matrix fan, not because I was an MMO fan.
Do you know what server you played on?
No, that was a very long time ago. That was a very long time ago.
Brandon has very...
I was there for that final day where they gave, you know, godlike powers to everybody and everything went to chaos.
You fought all the agents.
Yeah.
Hell, you go to my computer room right now, I got the map of Matrix Online on the wall on the first Matrix Online magazine and shit. But I love that game a lot. I was in the...
I did too.
I was a machinist in that game. I was in the guild, the collective. I don't know if you call them. They're the biggest machinist guild, but we're on recursion.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's a great game.
Yeah. I liked it when it lasted.
Yeah, the first 3 months, anyhow. Like after Sony bought it.
Yeah, I was fixing to say that was the game you told me that Sony shit all over, wasn't it?
Well, they didn't do anything with it, which is the problem.
Yeah.
They put it on life support immediately. Because I think they got it in some big license deal. And they're like, well, fuck this game. It's struggling, so.
So, staying with, you know, the theme of things that I was talking about, what is a game or a genre, if you can't think of a game, that, you know, like a lot of people loved that you just couldn't get into? Even though you're like, I know you all are serious gamers, you don't just play one thing. What was a popular game that everybody loves, it's legendary within the gaming community, that you just do not like?
Oh, shit.
For me, personally, to get the ball rolling, it's Final Fantasy VII. I don't like that game, even though it's one of the best games of all time, so to speak.
I liked it, but I just don't like that game at all.
I was pretty big on that. Is there anything
popular that you guys just like, what the fuck's everybody talking about?
I kind of got to go with you on that. Final Fantasy VII? I fucking hate all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every damn one
of them. Do you like RPGs in general, or...?
Some, it just depends. Like, the Final Fantasy series I could never get into, and one of my buddies listening to this is probably going to be like, fuck you, David.
Well, as much as I don't like Final Fantasy VII, I actually do agree with everybody that it is probably the best, but you're right. Like, for me personally, Final Fantasy VIII and Final Fantasy X and X-2 are awful. I can't see why Final Fantasy fans call those...
I don't like those either.
Like, even if you're a Final Fantasy fan, I have to believe that you guys you think that they're shit.
Shitty card system and awful. And then the
fucking water ball game.
Whatever that's called, the water polo thing. Yeah, in 10, the
Titus. That's the character's name. He plays that water.
I played it up until you got the guy on your team who was like the soccer or the volleyball player, dude, and that's like what he used in battle.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck this. I quit after that.
I was going to say the guy with the weird hair, and then I realized they all have fucking
and
weird
hair. And he's a total dude, bro. He's like, what's up, bro?
Yeah.
I play volleyball, bro.
Yeah, and you're right. In battle, he's the one guy that uses that fucking ball as his weapon. And I'm like, what the fuck, Final Fantasy? I'm done. And I can't play those games. I do not like Final Fantasy.
I fell in love with 7 first, and it was my favorite. It introduced me to Final Fantasy, but I like 6 better. 6 was way better.
Which is 3 on NES.
Yeah.
Or SNES.
Yeah, I gotta say the Super Nintendo Final Fantasies are the best, even though I don't like
Final Fantasy. The one game that I knew... the one that just sticks out in my mind right offhand, like the one game that I know a bunch of people liked when it came out that I just, still this day, do not like, Banjo-Kazooie. Really? I do not like any of the Banjo-Kazooie games whatsoever.
I don't know why,
but... I mean, it's...
Is that...
I just... I didn't have... Not that it's a bad game, I didn't have that much fun playing it, personally.
Yeah. Okay.
Back on the road, though, to Southern Fried Game Room.
Yeah, like I said,
got off on a tangent there. We had a pit stop there.
It's fine. We'll say it with this. What do you look forward to the most? Other than the fact that we're going to play arcade games for... an entire fucking weekend.
Being drunk for an entire weekend.
Me too.
Not working. I'm going to have 4 days off. This is the longest I've been off work in a long fucking time.
Yeah, I'm going to be off that Friday and Monday too. I'm pretty excited.
Like I said, I did take 2 days off to move, but that wasn't 2 days took off and leisure.
No, you're
that's not working. A vacation.
I would have rather been at work.
Well, we'll just leave it at that then.
All right.
So, I guess we should get on to our
games of the week.
Do you want to do that, or do you want to do the?
Oh yeah, let's do
the memoriam.
Yeah, let's do that.
Absolutely.
Let me. I got some music. I'm gonna. Oh well. Okay. That works. We're here to remember Vault Games.
I was expecting some more like Kenny Chesney exportation of feelings. Oh,
please, no. All I did was go to YouTube. I just went to YouTube and tapped in funeral music.
I was waiting for like taps or something to start
Where
playing.
Were you when Vault stopped trade-ins?
That terrible May Day.
Oh, Vault.
It sucks. We miss Vault.
Yeah.
And
awesome story.
I'm going to turn this down just a little bit more. Yeah. That's... Fuck that. It sucks. Vault's done.
Yeah.
We got David with us, of course. And we feel like you should have been here for this. David called Mark earlier. Mark may do a call in. Hopefully. We pretty much want to just take a minute, though, and just say pretty much thanks to Mark and Lynn Covington.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
They supported us a lot. They've been a big deal to Good Old Gamers since we got started. They've always advertised our shit, never had a problem with us putting our business cards in there. They told people about us and hope, you know, people's ended up, they heard about Vault through us. So it kind of, it worked out on both ends, and we're really, really thankful. Mark and them, they were a big deal for Game Fest last year. They helped us out tremendously and saved our ass in more ways than one, honestly. And they helped us get to Southern Fried last year, too, you know? So, I mean, we're uber thankful.
Oh, yeah, everybody up there loved the show. Everybody did.
David.
Even the neglect and abuse y'all gave me, it was still worth it.
Yeah. It was all in fun.
You know? Mostly
somebody abuse, come up though. There like, yeah, fuck you, David. But, you know, if somebody come up there bowing the chest too hard, you know, we could still kick some ass. Oh, yeah. So it wasn't anything like
that. It does suck that it's gone, dude. Like, I mean, Coleman itself, a lot of people went to the store.
Yeah, man.
Like, that was the mom and pop game store for Coleman.
That was the fucking hub for retro gaming.
Not the other shit store down the road.
We don't talk about them.
No.
They ain't a gaming store.
It sucks that there's no longer a retro store that I can go in and just browse in my own time and not have a pushy salesman or some asshole trying to, you know,
or
tell
some,
me this.
Some lady floating behind the counter acting like you're about to steal her fucking $9 right. Sesame Street ABC NES game.
I actually have that game.
Hopefully you didn't pay fucking $9 for it.
Jesus, no. Fucking two or three.
But, you know, it sucks losing a thing like that, you know, because, you know, you can't go into GameStop and find old shit. You know, you can't, God damn, it just sucks. Like, there's no way to really get around that.
I'm really going to miss it.
It brought a lot of people around that nobody really knew was there.
It did. That was, like he said, it was a hub, and it certainly brought a lot of members of the gaming community that weren't connected locally.
I want to make it you without
Yeah,
Vault.
I mean, that's how we met you at Vault. You know, I met you at Vault.
Met both of y'all at Vault.
I met Dave and, you guys.
Mark and Lynn, we met just going up there and bullshitting, you know. They were really cool about letting you come in and hang out. You know, you didn't have to go in there, like you said. You know, there wasn't a pushy salesman or just some aggravating shit to deal with.
They weren't like you buy a Nintendo game or Dr. Pepper and get the fuck out. No, they were like, enjoy your time here. You know,
I mean,
and he wasn't just a guy who ran a store. Like, he knows games.
Yeah, Mark. Yeah.
He knows what he's talking about.
Very passionate.
That was
about
the
games,
whole concept behind the store was like, we wanted people to come in and be comfortable. Not like, you know, hey, here's your shit, get it and get the fuck out. We wanted people to come in and actually enjoy the time and talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Get to know the people that's actually shopping there and people that work there. That way there's no kind of like, you know, well, he's just looking at me fucking weird.
Well, that was one cool thing, though, because Mark and Lynn are very giving, very kind, and very compassionate people. But that's one of the things I really love about both of them, because if you were a piece of shit turd head and you come in that store being a piece of shit turd head, they will not hesitate to tell you you're overstepping your bounds, you know, go the fuck on.
Once in a while, you'd get a couple weirdos in there. Yeah.
It happened a lot some days.
I bet you could tell us some stories, couldn't you?
Oh, good
Lord. I've been in there for a few of them, you know. But, I mean, that's every place of business. You know, you're going to have those wacko crazy fucking shoppers come in there.
That's the nature of retail in general. But yeah, yeah. Especially with games, you always get
it's
those,
like for every...
Like you talked about last podcast, one of those people that, you know, they think they know everything and they want to kind of, you know, act like they're more knowledgeable than you and, yeah. and treat you like you're a piece of shit, but they don't know what they're talking about.
You, man. That's what gets on my nerves. Now, the whole talking down to you, like well, I don't know if you know how much this game's worth, but it's going for this. And I'm like, motherfucker, you don't know what your game's worth. Like, you're overquoting something $200 here. Yeah. That's not a small amount of money for a fucking video game.
Some of those types of people, they don't take condition into consideration. No. They may actually, that day, know what they're talking about and have a rare game. But it's been drugged through the fucking parking lot by rabid dogs, and they're like wanting top
half of your fucking labels hanging off
for it.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, there's been a few occasions of people coming in, and they'll just like they'll assume you're going to take their shit.
I've been in there for that, like the people getting pissed off because you don't want to buy all their fucking shitty football, Xbox 360, and baseball games and shit.
But this was really popular. Well,
these
were worth
money.
It's Madden 14.
These were $60 when they come out. I'm like. 5 fucking years ago.
See, like, yeah.
And it's like with us, we were nice to everybody. We always tried to be. Yeah. Because there's no point being harsh towards anyone, really, when it comes down to something like that. But then you got them people that come in and set the stuff on the counter and be like, you're going to buy my shit. You're not going to talk to me that way. It's like, sorry.
I was present for that one time where that guy said something to Mark along the lines of that. He was just like, no, you're going to buy my games. Mark's pretty much like, I don't have to do shit. You can get out of here.
That's insane.
It was put in a polite manner, but
oh yeah, definitely. But
Mark's really.
I mean, he wouldn't. You know, he wouldn't. I'm not saying Mark would say something like that, but you know, that's nice. That's refreshing to see that somebody, you know, is just still along the lines of like,
oh yeah,
we don't have to take your bullshit here if we don't want to, because the world we live in right now is too PC and all that bullshit, you know, like
people
get so butthurt if you tell them that they're wrong, and then once they find out that they're actually fucking wrong, you know, you rape them with 1,000 knives at that fucking point.
That's the problem with society in general, is no one has any humility. They can't admit they're wrong.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
Man, you look like such a big adult when you're like, you know, I guess I fucked up. I wish more people would be able to say, oh, you know, that's my bad. But no, they're like, oh, how dare you say I'm wrong?
Everybody,
it's a personal to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a fact when it is a fact.
That's something
they take it personally, like you just don't like the look of their face or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane how people behave.
That's something I've always prided myself in and tried to teach my kids, like, don't be afraid to be wrong.
Yeah.
Because that's how you learn. If you don't ever realize you're wrong, you will never learn.
Yeah. And that's a problem.
That's one thing I can admit. I've screwed up several times, and I've always, anything that's ever yielded out of something I fucked up on, I've been blessed with the fact to be like, I'm a fucking idiot. And I screwed the pooch on that one.
People
I'm
need
sorry.
To learn to say that, but, you know, my bad.
Yeah, one thing I miss about Vault is, like, for me, right around when the Dreamcast died is when I went full PC gaming. Like, I didn't touch a console for a full decade, probably. And so I missed out on a lot. So when I finally started getting back into it, I could go in a vault like, hey, David, I want a decent PS2 game around $10-$15. And you could point something out to me. If I went somewhere else, then they'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah. Vault, everybody at Vault actually knew what their store had.
Yeah.
And, I mean, from a collector's point of view, you know, most people would bitch about that. But, you know, from my point of view, that's great. Because David and Mark and Lynn, them having knowledge, you know, it gets on a personal level with you. It's not like, oh, you want a shooter. Well, this game's a shooter. It's good. You know, like, they actually decipher what you're into, what you don't like, and break it down to a personal level with you.
Yeah.
You can't fucking do that in a store outside of a mom-and-pop game store.
Or, like, I could, when I brought my Commodore VIC-20 there, I was like, how the fuck do we hook this thing up to a TV?
I mean, if we sit there and tried.
Yeah. Couldn't do that anywhere else.
You know, you're right about the personalization of what they knew, what you liked and didn't like. Because there were times I came into Vault Games, and Mark would be like, hey, you know, you mentioned this to me before. Check this out that we just got in from our distributor, whoever they bought from. And I was amazed, like, how much I knew that that was a niche game and how much that was tailored to me. And he knew that that's what I liked. And I know it wouldn't really, like, be a big seller or anything like that. And I would always buy whenever he would suggest something like that, because he was spot on, because he knew who I was, because he took the time to give a shit. He cared. Oh, yeah. He really cared.
That was, well, know? Even if you could go David in there, you go in there and talk to Mark or talk to David, like you end up talking on a plane of stuff beyond video games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you could go outside, smoke a cigarette, hang out with Mark and just talk.
Yeah.
Dude, he's told me some crazy stories that I would have never heard anywhere else. I'm just like, you know, that's cool though, like that exchange on a personal level, because you're not going in there like a customer, you're going in there like a fucking friend.
Yeah.
And you know that, and it's almost, makes you spend more money generally, you know.
Yeah, too. Like, and it's almost more enjoyable than going to GameStop and you end up talking to the guy working at Shenanigans on Office Space.
Looks like somebody's got a case. You're spot on about that, Brandon. That is exactly how I feel in GameStop sometimes. That they treat that place like they're an Applebee's employee or something. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And yeah. See, that was kind of the thing we'd do. We would get to know people on a personal basis to a degree about gaming wise, like Chasen was explaining. Because if we seen something come in, we knew the person would want, we would pull it.
Oh, yeah, that was my deal. And y'all had any Zelda shit come through there, you know I got a big Zelda collection.
Oh, yeah.
It always had my name stickered on it.
Yep. You guys knew I looked for old school beat 'em ups that were, like, punky and trashy, like two crude dudes for Sega Genesis or, you know, Double Dragon, Final Fight.
Did you happen to buy the box Two Crew Dudes?
I missed it. Aww. I missed it.
That was the one I traded in.
Like, that was his.
Oh, really?
Indeed.
Oh, that's amazing.
I got it in a box slot and traded it in.
Like when Brandon, I can remember the game when Brandon come in. It was, he bought God Hand.
Oh, that's a really good beat 'em up. It's really weird, but it's a really good
beat 'em up. Very quirky and awesome.
Yeah.
Because he come back, he's like, oh, you got to try this shit.
Didn't they have those... like midget bosses, and I know you had that one combo where you could spank somebody. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you could spank like the
spank that guy.
Yeah. They had some.
Godhand was cool.
Some like gay gimp bosses.
Yeah, yeah,
and, they were very some effeminate. Big fat demons and stuff. It was just really weird and awesome.
I actually have a Capcom encyclopedia, and I got it unfortunately from GameStop, and the encyclopedia literally lists every character that's been in a Capcom game, and just going through the Godhand section of it, like, that was a cool
Godhand was game, weird when know? It came out. Yeah. Like Gene, everyone shit his on name, it.
Gene. Yeah, they did. But it got like a 6 out of 10 in a lot of
public. Yeah, but then if you look at recently, like IGN's top 100 games for PlayStation 2, it's on there.
Yeah. They do that with movies too. You know, a lot of critics will not like something, and then it becomes a treasure.
Best example: Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China. Blade Runner.
That is a great fucking
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Scarface. Those got crap reviews when they came out, and they're loved films now. But yeah, games. You definitely see that with games too. Godhand and many other.
Yeah, just over a year ago is when we recorded the Mortal Kombat X tournament at Vault.
Yeah.
Episode 9, Vaultality. Go back and...
God, it was that early into our...
It is. Good very God. Early. Wow. Episode 9, dude.
Was it 9? Mm. Oh, I thought it was 11. Close.
It may have been 11.
No, 11 was when I was on, so it was 9.
It was one of them that Lyle butchered the audio on.
That was definitely my podcast. Yep. The first time I appeared.
Because somebody's liked the wrong microphone to record with.
Well, you know, times. It was also fucking episode 9, dick rag.
I went back and listened to our earlier stuff, but man, we've come a long way in audio quality.
Alex, my cousin Alex, he listens to all of them. He was complimenting me on that last week when I went to his graduation, or earlier this week, actually, when I went to it. He was like, y'all have, you know, he was talking about listening to the old ones. He was like, y'all sound like two dumbass hicks at the beginning. He was like, now you sound like esteemed hicks.
That's what we're aiming for.
Very nice. Yeah, that's...
You know, the rule of thumb, I didn't know this, the way after we started, but you record like the first 10 or even 20 and just throw them away.
Yeah.
That way you learn all the ropes and you come out of the gate with a professional product.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool y'all didn't, though.
You can actually hear the evolution in ours if you... want to take that much time to listen.
That's why when we're going to be starting video soon, I'm going to do the same. I want to do that with video. Come out the gate, good quality product.
Yeah. That progression you guys will appreciate, and your fans will like to see the, you know, where you've come from. Because I know, you know, fans of James Rolfe and stuff like watching his
you know, first Castlevania, episode one, Simon's Quest stuff, and when he doesn't even appear, it's just like gameplay footage and voiceover, and that's just kind of a nostalgic thing, because you're going to get nostalgic fans of your podcast that...
You're always going to have the people that want the older stuff versus the new, but...
With anything.
You got to come with that comfortable medium.
Yeah.
I'm excited for making the jump in the video.
Yeah. I don't want to really focus on that after Southern Fried. Like, up till now, hopefully tomorrow, my arcade machine will be fucking done, and that's been a hell of a job.
You're still working on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so hopefully it'll be done tomorrow, and that will be... I'll have free time again, instead of soldering every single point on my monitor chassis, like I have been the past 12 hours.
Been there. I've made a main happen it before, but I made it much, much smaller.
I still need to do a whole cat kit and flyback replacement on it, but I don't have it yet, so... That'll come later. I just re-soldered all my joints and stuff because something was loose.
You have a sexy cabinet. I'm not going to lie.
It's going to be pretty awesome if Josh comes over and finishes the art on it. I'm going to love it.
So it's a full upright standee thing?
Yeah, it's going to be
two
main.
Two-player, four-player?
Four-player.
Wow, great. Yeah. That's awesome for MAME. Yeah.
Full Godzilla theme.
It's an old existing NBA Jam Tournament Edition cabinet.
Well, it kind of. It was the cabinet, like, it's an unknown fucking brand cabinet. I've encountered like some traces of it on the internet, but like those traces are people trying to figure out who made these cabinets.
There are some weird ones out there.
It's almost like the three comb Z-backs, but it's not. So, there's no like real identification.
It's a sharp looking cabinet though. I like the design of it.
But the guy who had it was a NBA Jam Tournament Edition cabinet. And, being an, you know, not that it was an original NBA Jam Tournament Edition cabinet, I really don't care about butchering it, which he already sold the guts out of it anyways when I got it. But I'm looking forward to having arcade game. I'm looking forward to playing Crawl on it. Crawl is fucking
awesome. That's a really cool game on Steam.
Yeah
I have that in my library.
Yeah, it's even got the arcade cabinet mode on it, so
right. Yeah That's awesome. I have a Data East RoboCop cabinet, and it's got that weird curved marquee that the Data East had for you know, Bad Dudes versus Dragon Ninja and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The only other arcade cabinet I can think of that has a weird shape to it is, you ever seen the original cabinet for Narc? It's so bizarre. It has like this miniature CRT TV, you know, resting on a shelf in this weird V cut out. It's like dipped into it. It's like underneath the, between the controls and the monitor, there's like this weird V space in between it. Like, look it up on KLOV or Clov.com or whatever, Killer List of Video Games.com, and just take a look at that what a dedicated NARC cabinet looks like. It's got a very odd shape to it, so it is always cool when you get an arcade cabinet and it's from something that's not standardized, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of strange shaped cabinets out there.
Is there anything we want to say as a last will and testament to Vault? David, anything you want to say first? Well, being that
I kind of got a question for y'all guys.
Okay.
It's always been kind of curious of me. What was y'all's favorite moments at Vault?
Just getting to come in and hang out and bullshit about video games. There wasn't anywhere else to really do that.
No.
Some of my favorite ones were bringing my console down there and just hooking up TV and just
being able to sit and play. And just,
I like, one that stands out to me is playing Shenmue down there, because I had to explain to so many people that would come in what I was actually playing. and you know, that's cool, because those people hadn't heard of that. And whether you like Shenmue or hate it, I felt like that's one of those games people should at least know about if you want to be into gaming.
Yeah.
That was a big deal for Sega.
It was a big deal as a Dreamcast.
That's why I bought my Dreamcast initially was Shenmue.
That sold Dreamcast.
That sold me on that shit.
Mm-hmm. I liked Shenmue, and it is dated. It is a very flawed game.
I would like to know where some sailors are at.
yes, those questions. And it really kind of popularized what the quick time events and all the
BS Taskmaster missions that Grand Theft Auto 3 got popular for on PS2. It's all the, you know, do this and that, and then I will give you this information, you know, and you have to go and use your forklift for some BS. And, but, you know, I still love it. I'm part of the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter. I did back that because I kind of miss that, even though it is dated. It's still, there's fun to be had. My favorite memory of all games is, I do think it was just kind of like having a retro gaming family and feeling like I wasn't, you know, the one guy in Coleman that cared about retro games, meeting you guys. And, especially when I did meet you guys, during the MKX tournament and, just being surprised when I found a hidden gem out there on the shelf and then bringing it to the register and having, you know, David and Mark like start chatting me up about it instead of just being like, oh, $14.99, goodbye, you know. Yeah. They were like, oh, you know, this is fantastic, and you know, I remember when I played it and this and that, and then if you like this game, then you'll like this, and just becoming, you know, kind of friends with you guys and David and Mark and even and Lynn especially. She was really cool about chatting us up too. And Vault was one of those few retro games that retro gaming stores that just you did feel like they knew what they were talking about because they play games too, and they were really friendly, and even if something was like high dollar on eBay, they gave you fair prices. Like they didn't price it off of, as you talked about last podcast, what it was going for currently on Buy It Now. They went for the appropriate, the sold listings and stuff like that. So even though the N64 original Super Smash Brothers is going for high dollar value, they priced it what it was supposed to be according to video game rankings. They didn't base it off of eBay or some, you know, printed video game guide, you know, physical paperback novel from yesteryear. They were current. They were up to date on it. And so you got good deals even when you were buying high dollar retro stuff for, you know, Genesis or NES or whatever. And that too, you know, when they stocked the shelves with good retro stuff, it was things that mattered. They had 2600. They even had TG 16 for a while. They had Turbo Graphics.
Yeah, we had games. A few of them.
I picked up a couple of those.
Yeah,
actually, they actually cared. That was the main thing.
I miss being able to go buy a retro game and hear prison stories while I was doing it.
Yeah,
nowhere else where you get that experience.
Yeah, they gave me. I'm not the kind of guy that, you know, resells and flips or anything like that. But when I did have a, you know, a minor pile of retro games to sell to Vault Games, they appreciated it. They were in awe of it. Not that I look for that. I don't care what anybody thinks when I'm selling it. I'm not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh, you know, bow down to my collection.
Well,
but when they saw it, they were like, oh, you know, that's pretty cool. And they gave me a fair deal.
They were very fair.
Yeah.
That was one thing Mark, you know, I'm super thankful for, because Mark kind of knew what I collected for and what I liked. And if they got something like that, him or David were first to call or text me right then. And, you know, Mark knew what collector knew what to, you know, he knows, like I said, he knows what you like. So I could carry, if they had a really good game that was a more expensive game I wanted, you know, I could carry one of my more expensive games up there, and Mark would work out a trade that where everybody, you know, comes out equal on.
Yeah.
I mean, right. And there's nobody else that will do that shit for you.
And when you were talking about, him calling you and stuff like that, I feel like, I'm sure I'm not going to be as arrogant as to believe I'm the only one, but I feel like I was one of the few people that cared about the Sega Saturn. And so, he hit me up on Facebook and was like, hey, I just got a big shipment of like 12 Sega Saturn games. And I was like, I'll be there tomorrow. You know?
Yeah.
And he let me in. He let me know that, you know, he had Saturn stuff come to the store the few time it did. And I went through the Saturn games and stuff, and he took care of them. He reasonably priced them. He knew about them. He played some of them. It wasn't just like, oh, I got some of this bulk stuff in at a discount, so I'm just going to, you know, here's your game. He was just like, he knew about it. He was there during that
I like day, being able know? To just pay a few bucks and try out a game for an hour.
Yeah.
That too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He lets you try them out before you buy them. That was super cool. He didn't have to do that. No store really does.
No.
But
no.
Vault did. And that's good that they went the extra mile.
Yeah, I mean, we had took time to actually hook up consoles for people so they could try a game out before they bought it. Because we didn't want people getting stuck with a shit game. Just plain and simple, we didn't want them to get stuck with it.
Yeah. Well, David, what was one of your favorite memories of the entire time you were there?
The entire time, the almost 2 years of it. I had a lot of good ones. I would say, like, my favorite thing that come from it is my friends I made. Because a lot of the friends I've got now would do just about anything for me.
Yeah.
And a lot of people ain't got that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we're all a bunch of nerds anyway, so, I mean, it's kind of beneficial. We can all talk on the same level.
Yeah. Vault really, in a way, like, united a lot of the Coleman retro gaming community.
Oh, yeah.
Did. I met a lot of the big players. You guys, David, David Bentley, Casey Johnson, you know.
We also were able to distinguish some of the more unsavory people.
Filtering out the bad guys.
That's a great thing because, you know, in this hobby and in the video game community, if you're involved, especially the retro gaming community, there are some snake motherfuckers out there.
The people that will, like, try to capture the multiple copies of Earthbound and flip them.
Or 17 high gains!
Or fake the high dollar games and stuff like that. You know, yeah. 20 little Samsons in my possession. Bull, no crap, you do not. And, it was good to, you know, kind of have an in on the retro community and know what was real and what was out there and or where the good deals were at. It did. It let us not just unite the figureheads of the retro gaming community, the big players of this city, this county, but...
Oh, shit.
Don't spill that.
No!
But, the reseller approaches again.
But also know what was real when it was out there and what was, you know, smoke up someone's ass and stuff like that. So, yeah, I do feel that not only do I think that I was having fun at the retro community, but knowing that, hey, I am a big, big player of the retro community, not just because I'm having fun with it, not because I wasn't arrogant. You know, and finding out that the other people weren't too, finding out the real retro players and stuff like that. Like I've built up a friendship, I believe, with you guys, David Bentley, and David here, with us here.
And that, I mean, that's one thing you really need too if you're going to pursue a hobby like that. Is the community is kind of what pushes an outdated hobby forward constantly into the future. You know, the community is the ones that are inspiring the new retro games to come out. The community is the one pushing for all the, like, these analog NESs and bullshit you see coming out. We're talking about, you know, that's because the want is there.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something that's really good, is when you can actually come together and find people that are like-minded that can, you know, band together and kind of push out the bullshit.
Yes.
Like, to the side. And that was one big thing Vault did, like you said, you know, it brought a lot of us together, and that's a good thing, because as long as fucking Good Old Gamers goes, whether it goes 10 more years or whether it goes fucking 2 more years or tomorrow, you know, Vault Games is still always going to have that fucking place in our history.
Mm-hmm. I got to say that almost never happens, and there's a big retro gaming scene in San Diego, but with them, I feel personally that it's competitive. But with us, it united us as a family, because Vault Games was just so friendly. Yeah, you know,
it was a perfect really made fucking central friends. Ground for all that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's one of the few places you could come into, and whoever's working was not going to be an asshole to you. Or talk down to you.
You know, you guys had awesome people working there.
You know, I know Vault Games was a video game store, and in the beginning, y'all had Magic, but the few times I came in there and played cards, I actually enjoyed playing cards there more than at the other card shop, which I'm not going to disparage, because they're a good place. Don't get me wrong. Yes. It's not hyper competitive.
No.
We're just there shooting the shit, throwing down some cards.
I'm never playing you again.
I've heard a lot of people. I've seen Brandon go through multiple TCGs over the years, and I haven't seen one that anybody wanted to fucking play him at again.
Put it this way.
I remember we used to go to Pokemon. This is a side tangent. We used to go to Pokemon Saturdays at Booksman. My mom would drop, or my grandpa would drop me and Brandon off, or Brandon's dad would drop me and him off there. You would go up there every Saturday, play play against our players, get badges, and all that bullshit. I remember literally seeing a child cry and sit outside because Brandon's fucking Charizard Armageddon deck just ruined that little kid's fucking life. That's, I mean, no, little kid,
how you know
he was,
you're doing it
granted,
right,
he was like yeah. our age, you know, now, but yeah. I remember seeing him sit out there and fucking weep tears of joy or disdain. And then also, I know another guy that we used to play Pokemon against, and it just completely changed his way of living.
I know who you're talking about. Turned him inside out.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. Oh. That's a little bit of an inside out joke. Anyways, it sucks not seeing that now, but all being said and done, you know, Mark and Lynn, if you're listening to this, thank you so fucking much. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Especially Mark and Lynn.
We lost thank more than a game store.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like I've been taking it kind of hard because it's just like, well, where do I go now to just bullshit about video games without looking
exactly
like a fucking complete loser? You know?
Yeah, I mean, if you just wanted to buy shit, I mean, the internet's there. There's more than that.
Yeah.
And it's that personal level, man.
Cold and transactional if you do it on Amazon or something like that. Yeah. But with them, you know, you felt like you're going in there with friends. And, I wasn't, you know, into trading card games. But seeing just a plethora, a good group of people in there playing Magic or something like that, it just kind of made me happy, even though that was not my scene at all. That was something I'd never stepped foot in. When I saw a big group of people there at the tables, I was just kind of like, you know, oh, okay, it's really chilled and laid back here, you know? I don't have to ask for something behind the case and feel like I'm bargaining or cutting a deal with somebody. I just feel like the atmosphere is real laid back, like a bar with regulars instead of a bar with cutthroats, you know?
Yeah, so completely.
It's just that atmosphere, that's rare. And that is kind of almost exclusive to retro shops. So having Vault Games gone, there's just a big vacuum.
There's a hole void that isn't filled.
Yeah.
Completely.
It's, now I'm going to have to fill that hole with something.
Well,
filling holes.
We got plenty of things around here to fill holes with.
Right here.
Greasy.
Yeah.
Right here. Here's
this,
the vault.
We are, nobody can't see this, but we're holding up our Good Old Gamers Fireball shots. Thank you to Max Force. For
no problem.
The alcoholic gifts.
Yep. Anytime.
And this is for Vault. We're taking a shot for Vault. So, David, I know you're not taking a shot, but this is for you, buddy. And like, this is for Mark. And this is for Lynn. This is for Vault Games. Rest in peace.
Even Heath.
Thank you. Heath, yes. Thank you so much for what you guys did. We appreciate it more than you'll ever know. Okay. May you rest in peace.
The shot.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Whoa. That was our farewell to Vault Games.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess now we'll jump to topic. We're talking some random games this evening. You want to go ahead with yours?
Yeah.
I think you want me to cue your...
Go ahead and load me up some
your music.
One of the few games I fell in love with immediately before I even played it, just because of the music.
We're not doing it live. I really wanted to be like first person to call in and tell me who this band was and name one other popular song they done wins.
Oh, I can't name a popular song, but I know who this is.
I can name one that everybody knows. But we're just not telling. It's Green Jelly.
Yep.
Little pig, let me in.
Not for the hair of my titty chin chin.
Yep, Green Jelly.
This game is one of the few, I would say, legitimately good games that LJN did.
Okay, I'm trying to
turn it down some. It's Maximum Carnage.
Sorry.
Specifically the SNES version, but I know the Genesis one's good too.
Yeah.
One of my favorite beat-em-ups of all time. Might not be technically the best beat-em-up, but it was one of my favorites.
Hey, it's the best beat-em-up to LJN ever released.
True.
By far.
Definitely their best.
Because I've always been a Spider-Man fan, especially Spider-Man, Venom, and Carnage. Like, those are my three guys.
Marvel. This literally, in my opinion, was the first great Spider-Man game ever.
Period. Yeah.
It definitely was.
Play Atari 2600, Spider-Man, or NES Spider-Man. God. I bet you, you'll agree with me.
No. It's the only good one on the Super Nintendo for sure, too.
Yeah. They even had a sequel that sucked.
Separation Anxiety?
Yep.
Yeah.
I did not like it.
No, I didn't either.
That was a sequel to Maximum Carnage?
Yep.
Kind of,
yeah. Did not know that.
It had a ton of different symbiotes in it.
Yeah.
Shit. Well, Maximum Carnage is based off the, as its name, Maximum Carnage series in the Spider-Man comics back in the 90s.
By far the most badass Spider-Man villain.
Oh, yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only guy who could top Venom was Carnage.
Was Cletus Cassidy is
Cletus Cassidy, name, and then Eddie Brock was Venom. Yeah. That was the best Venom. I don't give a shit. I mean, I like the new Venom reboot, but
Eddie Brock. Not that fucking Topher Grace Eddie Brock either.
No.
Fuck God that. Damn it.
No, when McFarlane was drawing the comics, when it was Eddie Brock, when he was stalking Mary Jane and stuff.
My man, Todd McFarlane.
Yeah. He's got a Spawn movie in the works, by the way.
I cannot wait.
Me either.
Some good shit.
But yeah, as we mentioned, it's a beat-em-up where you start off the game playing as Spider-Man. A couple levels in, I'll pass. I gotta drive later. couple levels in, you get to play as Venom. And the difference between Spider-Man and Venom, it's kind of subtle, but it's as you'd expect. Venom is slower, but more powerful. And for the most part, I like playing Venom better just because the punches felt like they were punches, like I was playing a superhero. Mm-hmm.
The crack, pow, and all the words.
You could hear that percussion in his hits right in the chest.
Yeah.
Boom.
The controls are basic. You just had like basic punches, grab, one special move. And then you could also juke a button if you had a power-up to summon in other heroes to help you. Trying to think where I was going with that.
You're not allowed to think.
I'm not, because I've been drinking.
One of the few colored cartridges for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, red cartridge.
A sexy red cartridge.
Red cartridge for Maximum Carnage, red cartridge for Doom, black cartridge for Killer Instinct, and is that it? Was there another?
Not that I know of.
Super Nintendo, I think there was just three colored cartridges.
One of the few flaws I really found of the game, and I don't consider it a major flaw, is there's a lot of repeat enemies. But what made them great was like when you started
hitting ups.
Their names are different.
Exactly, the names.
Final Fight.
Because when you punch somebody, you saw their life bar in the upper right corner, and their name was beside it. And I was like, it was just regular names like Sally.
Yeah, I was
like,
you just beat Charles to death.
Streets of Rage had that on the Genesis, but they had like crazy names.
It was odd. Like if you got killed by normal enemies, you know, like Spider-Man has got his ass beat by Joe. Like
yeah. I remember that.
In Maximum Carnage, Spider-Man beats up a hell of a lot of Axels, though.
Yeah,
with good reason.
He also beats up some Girl Scout. Looking people. Like they're the bosses of the first level. They're little Girl Scouts.
Oh, I fucking forgot about
that. They whoop
your ass with that hair if you ain't careful.
Yes.
They whoop their hair around and get you.
They fresh out that Green Jelly concert, got that hair whipped down pat, man.
But
By the power of shitty metal.
The overall formula of the game is pretty consistent. There's a few exceptions throughout the game. You go through the level of all the random, like, hoodlums. And then you get to the boss level. And each time you go to the boss level, other than a couple exceptions, you fight every boss you've fought before plus another one. So it gets fucking difficult. Mm. It's one of the few games I was proud of beating as a kid.
I've still never beaten Maximum Carnage. I don't think I've really invested the time to beat it. But I can single-handedly tell you one level that I'm sure you'll get to. The climbing up with the Spidey sense. Fuck that shit.
I don't mind that level.
It's not that hard, but it's just frustrating.
Most people got to Black Cat. She was on the roof, Black Cat. But when Black Cat came in, most people, according to the internet, seem to have cut out. They're like, I can't get past that.
You talking about Shriek? Because Black Cat was a good guy.
Right. But, I mean, when she was added, I don't...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't too far into the game, but yeah.
No, exactly.
It's
that hard.
that roof level, there's a good strategy to destroying it. There's a water tower at the top of it. Punch the supports out from the water tower, it'll one-hit kill a boss if you throw the water tower on them.
Oh my god,
and there's a life hidden under it, too. Really? So, you get that water tower.
That's some of that Brandon Gentry witchcraft.
I'm 27 years old, and I've never known that as much as I played that game during my childhood.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, like I said, the you can get team-ups with just little icons of the hero that you summon. The team-ups are Black Cat, Captain America, Cloak and Dagger, Deathlock, Iron Fist, Morbius, and then if you're Spider-Man or Venom, you could also call them Spider-Man or Venom. Cool. Eventually later in the game, they would both of them use a sonic gun. I think Spider-Man's was more powerful because it was Reed Richards' sonic gun. But yeah. And the main bosses of the game was Demo Goblin, who was Hobgoblin plus he's infused with the demon at the time.
I was going to say he's the only goblin that doesn't wear a mask. He's an actual fucking goblin. Demon from another dimension.
Yeah, he rides like some hellacious fire beast. Yeah. Shriek. And Shriek is the reason why you're fighting all these random douchebags, because that's her power. She drives everyone fucking insane around her.
Yeah.
Doppelganger.
Bet you she runs a 4K company, too. Yeah.
A Doppelganger, which for those who recall is the six-armed Spider-Man, essentially.
Yep.
And then Carrion, and then Carnage.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to butter, but was Cardiac in this game?
No.
Okay. I must be thinking about another game.
One thing I loved about this game is it had really large sprites in it. And the sprites for the heroes really held up to like the comics and the cartoons of that time.
Yeah.
I really love that. And in between the levels, you had like semi-animated comic strips.
Yep.
And that was really awesome. That was a good way to experience that story.
That game really captures a comic book feel. That's what I was talking about earlier with like the Clash and POW and all that shit. Like
they actually had a Spider-Man game based off the animated series, and even that didn't do it justice as much as Maximum Carnage did.
Yeah.
So
God, y'all are making me think of another game.
Spider-Man Web of Fire.
Is that what you're thinking? It's off subject, no comic.
Is that the computer
game? Comic Zone.
Comic Zone. Shit.
Yeah. Oh. That one's rare too.
Yeah, it's really expensive. Very rare.
That's one of the top 32X games there as far as monetary value goes.
I sold mine for quite a chunk.
Good.
I hated that fucking game.
It's not a good game, but it's extremely rare.
It just funded some more of my other collection.
There you go.
But yeah, the game largely follows that formula of going fighting the gangsters and then fighting all the fucking bosses you've ever fought before, except for one part. When you're breaking into the Fantastic Four HQ, you fight a giant-ass robot in there, and he's one of the harder bosses in the game, in my opinion. It's because you can't fucking damage him for shit, hardly, and he's always doing, like, area-based attacks, which you can't see the area that he's doing, and you just kind of got to guess. But one thing that was cool is, I don't know of any other beat-em-ups that did this, but you could take a lot of different paths in the game. If you went as Spider-Man at some point, you'd have totally different levels than if you went as Venom. Yeah. And in the game, there's some levels where you could be both Spider-Man or Venom. You just press select and you'd swap between them. That was actually my strategy for beating Carnage at the end. When you fight Carnage, he's a bastard because he's the end boss. But if you press select, when you swap out between Spider-Man and Venom, you get like a half second to a second of invulnerability. Abuse of that shit. Yeah, it's like 25 to 50% armor basically, because you're reducing that much damage by just constantly swapping them in and out.
Yep.
So that was a really great strategy for beating them if you get to that point. But I didn't want to get too deep into it, because I knew we were going to be on a lot of tangents tonight.
Have you beaten this game?
I've beat it several times.
You're amazing, man.
I love this game.
I'm not tooting his horn because he's one of my best friends or anything, but since we've been children, Brandon is one of the best fucking gamers I've ever seen, because
I've gleaned that from podcasts. Yeah,
I learn from his shit.
Well, the only reason I'm good at games, any games that I'm good at, rather, is it because I'm less like good at them? Is when I love a game, I obsess over it. When I'm at work and I'm just going through some bullshit routines, that's what's going through my head. Game.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I ever got good at card games, because I would just sit there and obsess over it. And
cool.
Well, side tangent, we were talking about Final Fantasy VII earlier. One of the things that made me truly realize Brandon was gifted, I spent several fucking weeks, well, 3 weeks or so, trying to beat this ghost boss in Final Fantasy VII. No avail. Could not beat it. Brandon comes to my house on that weekend, and I'm bitching about it. I'm like, can't beat this fucking boss. He's like, it's a ghost, it's dead, throw a phoenix down on it. I'm like, what? He's like, throw a phoenix down on it, it'll kill it. throw it on it, it fucking kills it. And I'm just like, fuck you. I'm not even playing Final Fantasy VII anymore.
Okay.
But cool. That was one thing that really cued me in on him.
Nice, Brenna.
I never even played Final Fantasy VII until it got its PC release years later.
See, and it would be some shit really? Like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ass hattery.
Damn. I never owned a PlayStation until Game Fest. It was the first time I owned a PlayStation. I gave it away. Yeah.
That's amazing. You really are gifted.
Well, it's just RPGs, you know.
I would just imagine you're about, well, it just comes to me.
No, it's just RPGs, one of the things that like I would just obsess over. I'd argue to my detriment that, you know, I could have been obsessing over things that earned me more money in life or something.
But I think we all could, any retro game.
Oh, yeah. That struggle is unanimous amongst everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be talking to people and like, oh, you know a lot about this subject. I'm like, too bad I don't know nothing useful, you know?
Same here. My brain is filled with like
pop culture knowledge. If I only knew more about thermal dynamics.
But I don't know anything that could like help me in life. Gotcha.
But I can tell you how to beat the fuck out of Castle 3 on Mario within like 2 minutes.
Yeah, I can tell you glitches on Mario 64 you still can't find on the internet.
Oh, that's amazing.
I play the fuck out of that game.
Yeah, I remember that too. I love
that game.
You had 100% complete.
Oh yeah,
on 64. Right?
I did that several times.
That's a fucking. That's a hell of a game.
That's a feat.
Well, the only really hard level to me on that was the rainbow level where you rode the carpet across the rainbow, and you have the one where you had to get the red coins.
Yeah,
that was the hardest star to get. But other than that, it wasn't that bad.
Okay,
but yeah. Anyway, it's Maximum Carnage. Great SNES game. I don't think it's too much, is it?
No, it's probably like a $15, $20 game.
Yeah.
It's absolutely affordable as far as loose copies go.
If you like Spider-Man and you're a retro gamer, you got to check
this game out. If you love beat-em-ups in general, man, like this is one of the finer ones.
That's it.
What's his name that calls himself the Pokemon Clan Master?
Steve Stevenson.
I thought that was Steve Stevenson. Okay. As much as he prides himself as that, I am the beat-em-up guy. And I gotta say, as the beat-em-up master, check out Maximum Carnage. That is, that's a must. If you're a beat-em-up guy, love Final Fight, love Double Dragon, go after Maximum Carnage. You have to. It's essential.
I agree.
Yeah.
The game I'm going to talk about may have not held up in time as well as you think it has.
It has not, but it's still good.
It's still fun. I'm talking about ye olde Mario Paint tonight, because I found my mouse pad and mouse the other day, and I broke it out and played it for about 3 hours.
I have a sealed copy that I opened recently, and I give that the MaxForce 357 seal of approval.
Say what you just said again.
I have a sealed copy that I've recently opened, and I give it the... I knew you were going to do that. I know, I opened it. I know. But it really doesn't go that much.
No, it doesn't.
But, yeah. I know I opened it sealed recently, but I have played it many, many, many times before that, and it's so worth it. This game... if you're a retro gamer or if you're a Super Nintendo collector, my God, you've got to check this game out. I know a lot of people pass it up because they mistakenly lump it in with educational Mario games. The early, what is it, the fun years, the early years, as they call it, the numbers counting one.
And then Mario went missing.
Mario's Time Machine. I'm a big proponent of Mario's Time Machine. You have to check that out. That helped me pass a lot of history tests in high school.
They're still great games. It's not what you're thinking.
But it's not really Mario. Not an educational game, but Mario Paint, whatever. It flat on its nose. It's a fantastic game.
Play
and buy it. It's cheap.
I have a cousin who I haven't spoken to since I was like 11 or 12. And the only reason I ever really cared about him is because he owned Mario Paint. So I was always asking if Justin could come over. I wanted to play Mario Paint. Of course, I didn't say that. He had Mario Paint and copy of Wild Guns. I wish I could have got that Wild Guns.
I rented that speaking for of Wild Guns, and I could have bought it for $15.
Oh yeah,
I bought it for $15.
One appeared on the page the other day. I'm sure you took notice.
I did. I emailed him. He said he wanted $300 for it.
He told me $350 initially, but I was like, dude, that label's too thrashed for me to do that.
Exactly why I backed out. He told me $300, but I backed out because you're right. The label was thrashed and like really bad.
Yeah,
I
had like a small dog.
I'd have paid $150, maybe $200 for it on a good day. If I was feeling really generous, I'd pay $200 for it, but it's... I didn't get fuck with it. No manual, no nothing.
Yeah.
If that label was as trash as it was, and he gave me maybe like the worst box in the universe, then I would have paid $200. But no, it was just flat. You're right. The cartridge, and it was thrashed, and he wanted $300, and I was like, no,
no. I couldn't. Yeah. Couldn't justify that. I
love
that.
Wild Guns, but hey. All you people loving Wild Guns are wondering what the fuck it is. It is worth checking out. It's a great game. Get it for $10.
One of the best Natsume games hey, they put out.
You can get it for $10 on Wii and Wii U.
I will say
regular Wii and Wii U.
Retro games. It's worth the price tag, I would say, because it's rare. Right? It is. Good.
It's a good game. And
Godzilla
it is
2
rare.
Is not worth the price tag. It fucking come off that price. I won't make a copy of Godzilla 2, you motherfuckers.
I have seen them on eBay. What the fuck
it's
with
all
the prices?
It's all because somebody's out there like, I got 75 Godzilla 2.
Oh, my God. Why do a lot of collectors sit on multiple copies? They're bastards, aren't they? Aren't they the worst collectors?
They are the people smokers, sit on multiple collectors? The proprietor smokers of dick.
Multiple copies. Like, yeah. If you have six Earthbounds in your possession,
fist your fucking asshole with a hand grenade. How about that?
You're Hitler incarnate. The few, you cannot have three copies of Earthbound.
The
in possession.
I will agree with that.
The few interactions I've had with people that do that, they don't even play the fucking games. They couldn't tell you what the first level's about.
They don't know dick about video games. They just like
it's like the another game just, store that will not be
rare,
named.
But they don't play. They don't even have a Super Nintendo.
The lady asked another game store that will not be named. I just asked them out of sheer curiosity. I'm like, I have an Earthbound set up there, and I'm just like, what would you take for an Earthbound? Mm-hmm. She's like, well, I'd probably just give you have to give you $60 to $80 store credit.
$150 like, loose, folks. $150 loose, even if it's bad.
Fuck your butt.
Bad label on the cartridge. Loose $150. Minimum.
My $5 copy I bought from the Wizard when they were still open.
Oh, that was
sold
you?
For $175.
That was you?
Fucking
I love you, man.
Dollars.
That was some boss shit right there.
I found that because I was searching through the shit and they randomly put their games out.
NHL 94, Shaq Fu, that's all they had. Killer Instinct.
I seen
Navy,
Prince
Pilot
of Persia.
Wings.
Prince of Persia was laying down there, like face up on his back. And I was like, well, fuck, they haven't had Prince of Persia in here, so I snatched it up. Earthbound sitting right there from the. I about had a fucking stroke. Like, I was on the phone calling my cousin Alex because he's a huge Earthbound fan.
I've only had
shaking.
One moment
like
that in my life.
I just found Earthbound for $5.
Oh my God.
Do you know what it was that I found that was real cheap laying in a pile of bullshit? Oh my God. It was laying in a pile of Shaq Fu's and NHL 94's and it was other shit. Balls 3D.
Yes.
It was a bunch of Super Nintendo games. You know what was laying on top of that for $10? And it was labeled as one of the high-dollar games, but they only wanted $10 for it. This was at the Coleman flea market. They wanted $10 for Ninja Gaiden Trilogy.
Motherfucker.
Ninja Gaiden Trilogy.
You bought $10. You get it. It was loose?
Yeah, loose, $10. loose. But the cartridge, I mean, like, the label and stuff like that, the cartridge, no, like, permanent marker, Sharpie, like, name on it or any of that bullshit. It was pristine.
It's like
cartridge.
$180.
They wanted $10 for that. And you're right, loose, maybe $180.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, I also got lucky after that, even though I didn't take advantage of that offer, was on eBay, I got a pristine. Only thing that was wrong with it is that it didn't have the plastic wrap on it. That's how good the manual in the box was with this cartridge. I got it for $115, and it was Ninja Gaiden Trilogy, but it was in perfect condition.
Nice.
The story with that, I got it off eBay. The story with that eBay seller was, I mean, a story as old as time. I'm moving in with my soon-to-be wife. We just got engaged.
She doesn't want this shit here.
She makes me want to clean out my game room and stuff like that. That's how I also
got
that.
You married the wrong one, bud.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how I also got that rare 200 copies of that Goro statue. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah.
That Goro statue made by, it's a company that starts with I, whatever. It's a company that starts with I, Interact, whatever. The very rare Goro statue that you commonly see on eBay,
and it goes for $750, and that's not an exaggeration. That really is worth that much. I got it for $50 because, again, I'm moving in with this woman. I asked her to marry me. She wants me to downsize my game collection. $50. I got that motherfucker.
I haven't made
$750.
I haven't made any announcements about it because I've been keeping on the DL because I'm kind of getting it for a fucking steal. And this is coming after Southern Fried. Like, I've already lined this up with the guy.
Right on.
My brother's buddy from high school had a boatload of NES games that he's wanting to sell off. And I was asking my brother, because, you know, he used to go over there all the time, like, what kind of games do you have? And he's like, well, baseball, football. He had Simpsons, the game where you spray paint things. I'm like, Bart vs. Space Mutants, whatever.
Is this the NES?
And Zach was like, he had a game that was like Mega Man. It was called Little Simpson. And I'm like, Little Simpson or Little Samson? My little brother's like, I don't remember. Just call Tyler. Oh, well, I called him last week.
850 loose. Bad condition.
He's got a Little Samson in his lot of shit. And he's eBayed it, but he's not wanting to charge me like no fucking. I'm probably gonna pay $350 for the whole lot.
No,
but I don't know. He knows what it's worth, but doesn't play him. He doesn't give a shit about it. He's fucking 24 years old and just had a kid. He's like, give me money. So that could be in my possession.
That's what happened to most of my Magic collection is a child.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
that's amazing. I want it, but, you know, at the same time, I have a conscience, and it kind of bothers me.
Just give
me
a flat five or five.
Well, maybe if he knows what it's worth, then
that was kind of the grounds, because I straight up told him, I was like, I'm just going to let you know. I'm like, nothing you got's worth jack shit. He had Bonk's Adventure.
Oh.
And he ended up trading or selling off Bonk's Adventure for like $50 to some dude. And I just pretty much told him, I'm like, dude, you got like a fucking $1,000 game. Easy. And he's just like, well, I know that you're probably not going to pay that much for this game. So he's like, let's come to something comfortable. And we just started talking. He was pretty much like, $350, we'll work something out.
Oh, you're the man.
And I can go get it now, but
you're
still
helping out
a brother.
You have
to
wait. You're not fucking him.
I know.
You're helping out a brother still.
This is like, I just feel bad, though. I've known this kid since he was like fucking 7 years old.
I'll tell you what. I've got the podcast back me up because the whole world's listening to this. Whatever you want to give for this guy, I will make up the difference for it. And I don't want anything out of it. I just want you to have it in your possession, okay? You get this little Samson, okay, from this guy, and you pay him a fair deal, and I'll make up whatever the difference is that you can't afford, okay? Get this little Samson. I'm serious. I'm getting nothing out of this. Just fucking get it. From this guy, from your cousin, okay? I'm serious. I've got some disposable income to come to play with. Just get this fucking thing from him. You put up what you can, and I'll make the rest, okay? We'll make your cousin happy.
Oh, it's painful.
As soon as you said it, he died a little bit inside.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Well, there is a reason I haven't announced. Like, there's a reason I haven't said. Like, one of my other buddies knows about it, but I just haven't said nothing. Because it's still kind of up in the air at this point, so I don't want to, like, I don't guess get myself.
Fuck it. I'll make it final.
So
psyched
up.
Do it, dude.
You know, we mentioned Earthbound a lot. Earthbound is one of the few reasons why I almost hate that retro gaming's got as big as it has.
There's a lot of fakes out there on the internet, and you know, you guys may know Pat Contry, Pat the NES Punk.
Mm-hmm.
He's went on this diatribe before, but I'll bring it up on this episode. There's a lot of motherfucking counterfeits out there game. Earthbound. So whatever
Earthbound
you guys got to
is
say about
the
Earthbound,
number one most reproduced SNES card.
Oh my God,
Earthbound
yes.
And Pagane are the two.
And if you guys don't know a whole lot about retro gaming, it's, if you're listening to the podcast for the first time or you're just now getting into the hobby, it's not just a rare game because it was weird in the American sense for the atmosphere of the 1990s. And so they didn't make many copies. It's really that good of a game. Like,
oh, yeah.
You guys may think, oh, you know, they're just boosting up with the lore, the mythology of it. It's this, you know, the white whale of retro gaming. No.
Earthbound is its own beast.
That good.
The Mother series is
its own thing. Take it from somebody who has beaten Earthbound. So I have played it. I have invested in it as a gamer who has spent time with it.
It is that good of a game, okay? You don't...
Yeah.
As somebody who hates... I know. Let me say hate with a very, very cautious... Loose connotation. I don't actually hate JRPGs. But with somebody who doesn't like RPGs as much as some gamers, Earthbound really is that worth your time and money. Please, if you ever get a chance, just get on your Wii or Wii U. So, actually, it's only on the Wii U. Get Earthbound for the $10-$15 that it is. It's $10, I think.
Would you say, Brandon,
Earthbound's
worth the $200 you'd spend on cartridge?
Well, I'm going to say yes and no, because to me, a piece of plastic not worth $200. No. That's what I was saying. It's one of the few reasons I hate that retro gaming got as big as it is. I've loved Earthbound since the day I had it when I was a kid. You can attest to this.
Yeah. I bought your copy.
Earthbound is that fucking
game. Back when you could not give away a copy of Earthbound, I love this fucking game.
Was it 2001, 2000 to 2003 that the retro gaming scene was good for people that didn't give a shit about it for the retro collectors?
Yeah.
Because I used to go to friends' houses and they'd like, I have a closet full of bullshit. You know, I have a PS2. What's with all this cartridge crap? You know, I'm going to throw it in the garbage. And I'd be like, I'm going to give it. I want to take it. And they're like, either you could take it for free or you could take it for me giving something to it. And I would give them literally stuff that I thought at the time didn't matter. And in the grand scope of things didn't matter. Like I would tell them that I would buy them anything they wanted to out of the vending machine in high school for the next 6 months. It's like all your Doritos and Mountain Dew are on me. If you give me all that like stupid shit out of your closet that you don't care about anymore. He's like, oh, it's from 92. I don't give a damn about the Genesis.
Dude, that was,
and I would stroke them.
99, 2000
stuff out of
the closet. Could go back to that time with a disposable income. Holy shit.
Yeah, dude. And especially I did.
That was cause you know, I was too young to have a job. I wasn't 16 yet. And so I would do, like, all sorts of this. That's how I became a retro gamer, was I was one of the few people who were too poor to own a new console. I had all the yesteryear stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, I would trade back and forth to, like, our local flea market and stuff and regularly have an income after I got the games I wanted of just stuff I wanted to play on the Super Nintendo while everybody was, like, obsessed with the brand new GameCube and the PS2 that was out. And I would have all this Genesis stuff at my play. And yeah, that was a good time for retro gamers, because that was the time where everything was low priced and no one gave a good goddamn about a cartridge-based game.
Oh, yeah, man. Especially, like, 99, N64 2000, when, like, the N64 era, man. Like, I remember when they were swapping over to GameCube.
Yeah,
you can go in there. Like, I remember KB Toys, dude. One of my things. I didn't have the money at the time. But going into fucking KB Toys at like 14, 15, they got Ocarina on Times on sale for like fucking
$5.
Yeah, $5 to $10 a piece
and everything.
And you know, I'm just sitting there and I'm like, and I remember even seeing people buy, you know, like 5 and 6 copies of the same game. I'm like, why in the fuck are they buying like 6 copies of that one game? Like, you can only play one of them. And now I'm just like, you know, I'm pointing to my past self and being like, you're the little douchebag that didn't realize shit. Like,
you know, Street Fighter 2 Turbo for Super Nintendo goes for $189 sealed on eBay.
I've traded so many copies of that.
And that's the thing. I'm talking about sealed prices here. And that actually, as high as it sounds, because everybody had that game. It was a common game. Street Fighter 2 Turbo on Super Nintendo. $189 sounds high, but that's actually a reasonable price nowadays for a sealed copy
on eBay. Sealed, yes, thing. I agree.
But here's the thing. That point in time, the 2001 to 2003 that we're talking about there, I got it from, you know, I can't remember. It was in the Huntsville Mall here in Alabama, USA, for international listeners. I can't remember if it was Software Etc. before GameStop absorbed them. And or if it was from KB Toys, but I got it for $199 in a bargain bin of shit no one cared about. $199, and it goes for $189 on eBay. You know, so that kind of gives you guys the climate of how much people were ready to adapt to the media of CD-ROMs and DVD-Rs and stuff like that, because that's what the PS2 was on, was all these modified DVDs and stuff. They just did not care about cartridges anymore. And so, man, that era when
a little after, maybe 4 years after the turn of the century, people just did not care about cartridge games. No. And you could get stuff sealed for nothing. And I miss that.
I remember my buddy, like, I guess it was, I was 15, 85 is when I was born, so 2000.
You're born in 85?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm an old fucker.
I was born in 88. I'm
30 years old.
Reagan administration, motherfuckers.
I'm about to be 30, June 26th.
Welcome to the club.
Oh, shit. We might have to do a little something for your birthday in Atlanta.
Y'all are older than you look. You guys are looking good for your age.
thank God.
Did not think you guys were that old.
Dude, I lost my train of thought just then.
We were talking about Mario Paint. Mario Paint.
That's what I was trying. Yes. Yeah.
2 hours ago, we were talking about Mario Paint.
That's my fault, guys. I'm sorry.
Nah, mine too.
We got off on a tangent. No, it's fine, there. Man. We need episodes like this every now and then to break the monotony.
Right on.
Mario, one of the things that I favor most about Mario Paint is being able to manipulate the fucking title letters of Mario Paint. Yeah. Waiting on Mario to get underneath the A and just going, fuck you. Click the A and he's like, bow!
Okay, do you guys know about Totaka Song?
Absolutely not. Me.
You know about Totaka Song?
No.
Totaka Song? Totaka Song is an Easter egg within a lot of Nintendo games. Damn it. Damn it. I can't remember the guy's first name. It's heavily Japanese, and I'm not a Japanese speaker. His last name is Totaka.
We're all good here.
I think his first name is Kasumi. Kasumi Totaka? That could be wrong.
That sounds vaguely familiar, thing. Though.
Totaka is definitely his last name. Totaka programmed music for a lot of Nintendo games, like good staples. I'm talking like Wave Race 64, Wii Sport, Pac-In for the Wii, and stuff like that. The first big thing that he was part of, aside from X on the Game Boy, which is a Japanese exclusive, was Mario Paint for the Super Nintendo for all regions of the world. And he put this little few notes of music called Totaka Songs in all these games he's programmed in as an Easter egg. And to this day, some people are looking for Totaka Song in some games that haven't surfaced. And they found it in a few, like Mario Paint. And I believe it's when you bomb everything and you hit with the O in Mario Paint. And it just goes bloop, bloop, boom, boom. Bum, 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 bum. Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm a few beers in, ladies and gentlemen.
It's okay.
Anyways.
We keep it classy around at the Good Old Gamers podcast.
Right. And you can find that little tune in a few of the games that he's done music for. And Mario Paint was the first one that he did it for and that people found. You know, like Easter egg hunters and stuff like that. But if you fucked around again with clicking on some of the letters of Mario Paint, you would get a different song, and it's not ever talked about. And I'm trying to get people to you know, discuss it or figure out what the fuck's going on here, but no, it's not the one that's Totaka Song. So I'm thinking it's a Easter egg that's exclusive to Mario Paint, and from what I can tell from my research, it is. But you know, when you either regularly start Mario Paint by clicking on Mario, or if you do fuck around with some of the letters, you get those weird people doing gymnastics, those stick figures, right? Yeah. And it's just like, dun, ba, dun, ba. It's like those triumphant tune, and then the Mario Paint starts. If you fuck around with some of the letters, and I'm not talking about Totaka's song, for all you Easter egg hunters out there, there's actually a different song that's also an Easter egg. And I don't know how to do it, but I've done it before many times, and I can't figure out what it is that triggers it. And Mario Paint fans will know what I'm talking about. But you fuck around with those letters a little bit, instead of that little triumphant tune, you get, like, something tribal. It sounds like they toured, and I'm not to be racist here, like, it sounds like an African tribe.
Like jungle drum.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
And if you fuck around with the letters a bit, it's not Totaka's song, but it's another Easter egg song. And instead of the dun-dun-dun, when you start Mario Paint, it's hey to 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 hey to to
yes,
Mario yeah. Paint! Oh! It's all these like foreign guys and stuff, and then Mario Paint starts. And so it's like another Easter egg, but it's exclusive to Mario Paint. It's a different song that is created by Totaka, but it's not Totaka's song. And yeah, so you, Lyle, you yes, know what I'm talking yes, about yeah, there.
I have heard that before.
There's this different.
There's other Easter ways in the intro Mario scene, Paint. Though, to trigger that as well.
But I can't figure out what the only thing is that triggers it. But there, if you do fuck around with letters, aside from getting Totaka song or the regular Triumphant Fanfare song to start Mario Paint, there's like, again, like some kind of ethnic African tribe. Yeah. And they even say Mario Paint, and they're like their other. Their accent, you know, their local accent. And then there's all this cheering and stuff going on. What is that? What the fuck? What's the story behind that? Did the Mario Paint crew, like, vacation in Africa or
there's
something?
A lot of what-the-fuck moments in Mario Paint. True. Like, one of mine is, like, true, you know, you make a game that's a weird game. It's creatively driven. Like, one of my favorite things was back in the day in Nintendo Power, they released the grids where you could draw, you know, NES sprites, pretty much. Yeah. And I would make videos of Link. Like, I remember making tons of the little tile blocks and making Link and Octoroks and shit and just making the simple animation, you know, where it does the weird, you like click and draw. It's like a little fish looking pointer thing and you draw the trail and, you know, making Zelda animations constantly. What the fuck's up with the fly game? Which is absolutely my favorite part of Mario Paint.
And the little symbol in the second menu is a little coffee cup, and it's, I guess it's the coffee break from you being creative in Mario Paint. And it's to get you. I mean, the whole game is to get you used to the SNES mouse and mouses in general, because Windows 95 was new.
That was a breakthrough at the time using a mouse.
Right. Like. You no longer had to put in DOS commands on the computer, string of things to launch a game and to install a game. You had a user interface, you had a desktop, you had icons to click on. I know this is very like, ordinary now. GUIs, yes. User interfaces and stuff like that. But I know for you young people, millennials out there, clicking on shit was new at this time. And that's the whole point of Mario Paint. It wasn't to give you guys an MS Paint knockoff. It was to let you guys be familiarized with a mouse with your computer. But on a Super Nintendo, because, you know, Nintendo wasn't in the business of making computers. And so, yeah, I guess the thing to really make you agile with a mouse was the coffee break. And a lot of people don't know, I guess, unless you have the manual or unless you guys are, like, Nintendo aficionados, but the game itself was called Gnat Attack, where you clicked with the fly swatter, which was your cursor, your mouse, your arrow, or whatever, on the little gnats to kill them throughout the game. But that was the point of Mario Paint in general, was to just get used to the mouse. And, I know I'm such a motherfucking bastard bumming cigarettes and shit.
I do want to say, there's one thing.
That was a cool, weird mini game, was to kill gnats instead of creating pictures. And that was arguably, amongst some people that play Mario Paint, the best part.
I want to say, there's one skill that makes you feel good about being old, is knowing DOS. When some young
I still
guy
remember them.
Encounters DOS,
I still remember all the
and their
DOS
eyes
commands.
Glaze over, you're like, I got this shit.
MS-DOS approaches.
Yes, yes. And even
hope
if
you're leveled
you,
up,
and even if you young people are out there using the DOS box emulator to run some games, then actually you do know what we're talking about there. And if you guys are running, you know, not Wolfenstein on Steam or anything like that. If you are playing it through DOSBox, you are using DOS commands, how you're having to mount your drive and stuff like that, too.
Yeah.
And running
the
program.
Use that at work.
You're using DOS.
I actually got to use it at work a few months ago. We had an old mill die on the hard drive died on it. Mm-hmm. And it was DOS-based. And so I was like, you know, they were going to pay someone thousands of dollars to come here and face. I'm like, it's DOS, man. Just give me a floppy disk and I'll get it.
Right. As high-tech as my company is, my company will remain unnamed. Because of the controversial topics we talk about on this podcast.
Indeed. Such as cuckolding.
Cuckolding, yes. Cuckolding. Which is the reason why I cannot access this podcast on my work computers. It got flagged in the filter. Cuckolding. When I went to Germany, some of the computers I used over there were on DOS and stuff like that. And you had those big ass 3.5 inches, the smaller ones, but the 8.5 inch floppies.
Yeah.
The ones that were actually floppy.
Yeah.
If you wiggled them in your hand and shit. They ran on DOS and stuff like that. It's good to know DOS commands. And even if you are working at McDonald's and you have no business messing with computers at your work site and you're just playing on the computer, Let me tell you, DOS commands are still something you should learn because they can help you a lot.
Even if
fixing
you never
your computer if you have a virus or want to play an old game.
If you never touch a machine run by DOS, command prompt is still very much the same as DOS.
And that command prompt is still built into a lot of Windows computers. Just, you know, hit your little Windows button in the search prompt,
type CMD.
Yeah, and you get a little black screen, and then you can enter in DOS commands. And if you want to know some DOS commands, just look them up on Wikipedia or Google them. It can help you a lot with your computer, trust me.
If you have no clue what the fuck you're doing with the programs you're messing with, just type in the program file name and dash question mark.
Yes. Totally.
I guess that's all from Mario Paint.
Yeah, we talked 5 minutes out of an hour from Mario Paint.
You can tell we're drinking tonight.
Yeah.
I hope, yeah, Mario Paint was just not an awesome, like, Nintendo answer to MS Paint. It had a animation feature where you can animate the sprites that you either stamped or hand-drawn into your Mario Paint pictures. It had a coloring book feature where if you weren't creative, you could just paint a bucket in the colors to the different sections on a pre-drawn template. You could create music. And I'm not talking simplistic MIDI file music, even though it was MIDI-based. You could create some pretty intricate songs through their music editor if you are musically inclined. Even their examples, if you just hit them in Mario Paint on the cartridge, are pretty awesome for what they pre-built into the system. Music, coloring book, animation, that's pretty much it.
I will say stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We were talking about music on Mario Paint. The one thing that always unnerved me is the little face that you could put on the Mario Paint music scale, you know, like
the thing that sounded like an orgasm.
Well, that segues great to what I was about to talk about.
I'm not kidding. I was an old school pervert. I'm still an old school pervert. I drew a dick ramming in and out of a vagina with the animation editor on the thing, and I used, when you could put music into your preloaded thing, used that face template that sounded like an orgasm. So when the dick was going in and out, it was all like,
See?
That's amazing.
You could make shitty hand-drawn MS Paint porn in Mario Paint.
That's exactly what I was about to talk about.
Oh, there you go. It was not the only one.
It was my first source of readily available porn besides beneath my dad's mattress.
I'm not
I could draw my own porn and animate it.
Thank you, Brandon, for backing me up on that.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I remember the porn you used to draw when we were in, like, second and third grade.
Oh,
goddamn! That was amazing.
Mario Paint is awesome. It's super cheap.
Mario Paint.
Please grab your copy if you know. Even on eBay, it's cheap. You gotta. It's a fantastic Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Mario Taint. I guess since we're done talking about that it's time for us to get a little
hot and steamy.
Oh baby, I'm gonna butter your bread.
I'm gonna make this one a bit of a wham bam, thank you ma'am, because we've gone on quite a while. We're pretty deep.
Felt it.
We're pretty deep into this episode, aren't we?
We're about 2 hours and 17 minutes deep.
Yeah, I'll make this one quick. This week's hot and steamy, Road Redemption. You played Road Redemption yet?
I'm actually signed up for that Kickstarter. I've got a high tier. I've been alpha and beta testing it through the beginning.
Okay.
Road Redemption supporter here.
It's the spiritual successor to Road Rash. And
first Kickstarter ever backed.
Sweet. Yeah, it's pretty much a modern take on Road Rash. The graphics, while they're lacking in texture still, but it's early access, so you gotta view it for what it is.
Yes.
They look good though. If you just look past the textures, the graphics themselves, the polygons, they look good. Everything looks real smooth, real nice. Everything plays good. The controls on it really good. For those who don't know what Road Rash is, it is a motorcycle game
where
you beat the fuck out of all your opponents.
Before you get cautious, Road Rash fans, on the Kickstarter itself, Road Rash
project lead of Road Rash 1, 2, and 3 said that Road Redemption is fantastic and everybody should back it. Coming from the guy who was behind Road Rash 1, 2, and 3. If he's backing Road Redemption is something to pay attention to for Road Rash fans.
One good thing about the game, it's got a huge variety of weapons. I mean, you can get C4 and stick it on other people's motorcycles. Pipes, yes, axes.
That's my favorite weapon.
Yeah, C4. I love C4 because you can take out so many motorcycles.
Oh, you so can. Yeah.
There's even guns, which I'm not a big fan of the guns. But shooting straight forward is okay, but you start aiming to the sides, it don't really work.
They're still working on it, and someone who's been there from the beginning with each patch release, it gets better and better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll get more accurate. I'm sure it'll be fine when it is released.
Oh, see, my main problem with the guns, again, shooting forward, fine. But left and right, I'm also trying to go forward on a motorcycle like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's fast.
But yeah, it's all kinds of crazy costumes in the game. I couldn't even begin to tell you how many there are. I know there's like a fucking crazy Biker Santa and some other shit.
Nice.
Oh, Shovel Knight was one, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's Shovel's weapon in the game, so you know they had to do Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I would love to ride a motorcycle and beat somebody with a shovel at the same time.
Oh, it's a great Shovel's a great weapon because it's so fucking long. It's got a hell of a reach on it.
I just imagine some shitty B-movie scene where some dude on a motorcycle comes up and just like slings a shovel and it just... cuts the whole fucking top half of somebody's head off.
Well, for somebody who's played the alpha and beta, and from the trailer itself, the trailer is true. You really can fly off of a ramp, and then if somebody's getting neck and neck with you in the midair, you can hit them in the neck with a fucking katana and sever their fucking throat.
Oh, motherfucker.
It's so goddamn cool.
Hell
please
yes.
Please get this game early access.
Hell yes.
It's awesome.
It's also got great local multiplayer. Uh-huh. I've seen people bitching about lack of online, but fuck that. I don't even give a shit if it ever gets online.
It's a local game
you play.
Yes.
Land it up.
No, it's just local. Like, split screen, four people.
And you don't have to be on PC or Steam. They swear it's coming out on like Wii U and 360 even, you know?
But yeah, up to four players local call. One thing that's kind of weird right now, and I imagine they're fleshing it out, is the campaign / mission mode.
Mm-hmm.
You go, every level is like another objective, like either be first in the race or kill eight people or something like that. Yeah. But you get it comes with this weird like character advancement system. I'm like, it really doesn't feel like it has a place in this type of game. It should be a lot simpler because I mean, it's the type of game you just want to jump in, wreck some shit, and then jump off. Because like you do missions, you get cash, which you can buy power ups. You get experience, which gets you permanent power ups for your character. And I'm like, I mean, it's kind of okay, but I'd really prefer just none of that. Just give me money where I can buy new motorcycles. That's it. That's what you did in Road Rash. That's all I need in this game.
Yeah.
But I guess it's one of the things you can kind of ignore if you want to. Just dump some cash into the things that you know is going to benefit you and then ignore it. So it's not a huge detractor from it. Besides the campaign mode, it's also got a quick race mode, so you can just jump in and do a race like I was talking about. So you can kind of just ignore it altogether. But overall, Road Redemption, very hot and steamy. Pick it up.
Yes.
So it is. It's good, in your opinion.
Yes. It's bonerific.
That was perfect timing.
I really think it's going to shape up to be a really great game. I'm looking forward to it.
I've been following it from day one. I completely agree. You throw down your money on that early access. Road Redemption, solid.
Very nice. We want to get on to the question of the week with the calls and such.
Yeah. Why don't you pull up the old book of faces? We didn't get much this week because Facebook fucked us.
Facebook is really good at fucking us.
Sometimes Facebook is a finicky bitch. Sometimes everybody in the fucking world will see what you
sometimes
post.
415 people your post reach, and sometimes 4.15 people your post reach.
0.15.
Well, a really small midget saw it.
Brandon, we don't use the term midget.
I use the term midget. What are they going to do? They're midgets.
I just kick him for their potions so that I can fight Death Adder at the end.
That campfire. Very well spoken.
Yeah, like I posted this earlier yesterday, and only 67 people saw it because reasons. Because Facebook.
Like, I shared the same thing. I didn't have any responses.
We got one response. and Nicole. Jeffrey Hargrove. Well, first, we should read our fucking question, I guess. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, possibly.
The question that we gave y'all last week was, what sets retro games apart from modern games, and what makes them more fun to you? Jeffrey Hargrove says, definitely difficulty and how nonlinear they were. Games these days hold your hand too much, other than Dark Souls. Well, I would have to say, I think games back then were more linear, but I think I know what you're driving at. They didn't.
The difficulty factor was still way up on
they didn't
the
challenge tell you
factor.
What they didn't
totally.
They didn't tell you what to do every corner of the game like they do now.
Do you remember ever there being tutorials on something like Super Metroid? No.
No, you got through to the wolves.
Either you had the manual or you didn't.
Yeah. Nintendo man was very cryptic about that shit back in the day because like Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, you have never known about the fucking tornado that comes and carries you off and shit.
Yeah, yeah, all that kind of cryptic shit. Or something like that.
Star Tropics, if you didn't have the map, you used the lemon juice on in Star Tropics and didn't know what you're playing, you're fucked.
You had to have the physical manual out of the box and wet it under your faucet at home till you find out that one part of the game.
Manual? I have it loose, and that's why I still have it beating that fucking game. That's just something, I guess, like...
So, this from my own answer, as I've gotten older, I've appreciated the, I guess you could say the simplicity of it more, the ability to just pick something up for 20 minutes and put it down.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be huge in MMOs.
Not having to invest all your fucking time.
Yeah, you got to invest so much time into MMOs to be worth the shit out of them now.
Yeah.
Any of them, really. Most modern games, you spend 20 minutes a day in Fallout 4, okay, I'll see you in 3 months.
Well, they have so many fucking modes for the game. It's not just, like you said, not with retro games. You jump in, run left to right across the screen, and clear obstacles. Now you gotta build bases, you gotta provide food, it's full-on fucking survival modes now.
The retro games versus new games. Retro games is about skill against the difficulty setting, and retro games, it's about, well, we don't want to make it too difficult because we want everybody to be able to see the end of the game because they paid a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
So instead, what we're going to do is give you like a bunch of extras, whether it means anything or not.
Another big
I would rather have difficulty and never see the ending.
Or horde mode.
I said I would rather have the difficulty and never see the ending.
Say another thing is it just difficulty. Yeah. Back then, retro games couldn't sell you on graphics like so many games do now. They had to sell you on gameplay.
It was all playability back then.
Yep.
There was no, look at these damn graphics.
Now people have $1 million budgets and they can have cutting edge, graphics.
You can post fucking YouTube videos now of your game in action. You couldn't do that back in the day. No. You picked up your fucking NES or SNES cart and you went by what the back fucking pictures on the cart and the description of the game went by.
There wasn't a big community of reviewers.
No, it was all about the box art, too.
Yes.
If it didn't seem appealing, you weren't going to touch the shit. Just plain and simple.
Box art was a big fucking deal.
Speaking of box art, I'm going to be interviewed as a feature in a new documentary called Box Art. And it's, of course, about the influential box art from yesteryear.
Nice.
And as somebody that's going to be part of that documentary, I'm going to talk about some awesome box art from our childhood and whether it was, shitty or scary or really, really cool looking. And how it sold me as a gamer on the individual game. So I kind of have a question for you guys. As far as box art goes, what was the box art that really sold you on a game but let you down?
That's just Quest.
And Mega Man.
What was the game that you were like, who gives a fuck? That box art looks lame, but you somehow played it and it was like really amazing. And you try to tell people how awesome the game was, but the box art, they were like, that looks shitty,
God, I'm really
as far as a game that positively sold me on box art and then let me down.
Yeah.
The first Mega Man. I remember going and renting Mega Man and seeing the cover. I'm like, he's got a gun and yellow armor.
Mega Man 1 for NES.
He's blue and he doesn't hold a fucking gun. He has a Mega Blaster or Mega Buster, excuse me. But, that was one thing. I remember being 6 years old and I'm like, where's his gun at?
Yeah,
he's got holding a gun arm. Pistol. He's not holding a pistol in this game. You know,
My answer for that half the question was Fester's Quest. Because the cover of Fester's Quest looks like a metal album.
I still hate
it. It looks kind of cool.
Fucking game so much. That game is
awful.
You know,
Brandon's good at it, though.
Really? Yeah. That's a hard fucking game.
I liked it as a kid, because I think I was sold on the box art. But, yeah, I went back and tried to play it again, because I wanted to talk about it. I'm like, huh.
It's not a good game.
It's not a good game. As far as games, I have terrible box art. My favorite is NES Vice Project Doom.
Oh my god, that's such a good game.
That is a great game, but that fucking art is horrendous.
It's like it's a like side-scrolling shooter.
Shitty
80s. Beat 'em up, and it's got a light gun section, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. It's got the first-person shooter segment where you fucking move the cursor across the screen.
Yes.
It's like a blend of Ninja Gaiden, RoboCop, like the fucking target shooting levels in RoboCop,
yeah.
Like a blend of that, and I guess that's about it. I compare it to Ninja Gaiden a lot, because it's similar in the sense.
Maybe Shatterhand.
This will be a cliche answer for me, but for that side of the question, Earthbound. I mean, Earthbound's art wasn't bad, but it wasn't nothing to write home
It doesn't
about.
Really symbolize it, what the game really is.
It doesn't really tell you what you're going to buy.
Right, you look at it like, huh, what's that?
Yeah. For me, the game that looked awesome according to the box art but was terrible to play was Spider-Man / X-Men
Arcade's Revenge
for the Super Nintendo. Man, it had Juggernaut fighting Spider-Man and all the classic X-Men.
If it makes you feel better, I got that game when I was 10 years old on Sega CD. Jesus. And I wanted to kill my parents on Christmas.
it's a miserable game. Like, it's so difficult.
What the fuck is this?
The hit detection is non-existent. You'd be punching through somebody and none of your damage registers. It's very crap platforming, but it looks it's a beautiful artwork. Artwork that looks like crap and has a really good game. The reason why the artwork looks like crap was it was the entire company swan song. And they had the art, they had a contest going for their new game, and, you know, whoever won got to do the box art. And, of course, it was just a fan, so he had, like, you know, bad box art, because he's not, like, a professional artist or anything like that.
He's sending in his GamePro envelope of the month.
Yeah.
make this a game.
It was nearly hand-drawn, but it was low, old-school CG looking, you know. It was bad computer graphics. It was, like, very primitive computer generated stuff, 3D stuff.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be a really good, like, space shooter. Like, Galaga on steroids perfected. And that would be for the Game Boy Color Project S11 by Sunsoft.
I've seen this game, but I've never played it.
Okay. I have this game complete.
Like, it was Sunsoft, usually.
I bought it out of the bargain bin at, like, a Rite Aid pharmacy or a CVS pharmacy or something like that. And I had a Game Boy Color and I didn't have much money at the time. And I was like, $14.99. I'll get it.
Hidden gem.
Yeah. I was like, I can't get the latest, greatest game, but I'll buy it. And boy, that's some bad box art. It looks, it's like in this Pepto-Bismol, like pale pink hue all over the cover. It's nasty looking. It
looks like pussy.
And you're like, oh, so, right. And like Westerns are like the most generic thing in cinema, space shooters are the most generic thing in gaming, and you're like, ah, space shooter. But some reason I fucking bought it, and I can't tell you how fantastic that game is. Reviewers of the time talked about how it utilized the Game Boy Color's special effects to the point where it was amazing what it could do graphical effects-wise with, like, heat waves and, like, the water effects and, like, the lush jungles and stuff. How you could shoot stuff down below as far as stationary rocket blasters on the roof of a base, a military base, while shooting aircrafts in the air. Like, it was just awesome for special effects on the Game Boy Color. But no one really paid attention because it was a space shooter and it had crappy box art. And it was a budget title. But it's fucking fantastic. And the music, oh god, the music is great. And it had that cool thing, and I know this doesn't seem like much to modern gamers, but the scoring wasn't based off like, ooh, 100 points because you know, shot somebody high tiered. It was all, everybody you killed, you got one fucking point for. So when you got your final total, when you beat the game, that score was exactly how many people you killed. So if you got 654 for a final total of the game, you killed 654 people. Bosses included. Bosses were also fucking 1 point. And I thought that was cool because you got to see like how much damage you did instead of just like this arbitrary point value system.
Like,
you
know? A random score.
Yeah.
Tallied 500
for a blue colored person, you know? It was awesome. Great music, great gameplay, great special effects, amazing graphics, tight controls, cool power-ups. It wasn't just like lasers and missiles like, say, Raiden Trad or Raiden X or, you know, Raiden 1 and 2 or Galaga or anything like that or R-Type. You had missiles and lasers and these purple beams and flamethrowers that you could upgrade to longer flamethrowers or missiles that spread out or a laser beam that... There was like a sonic blaster, like it blasted you with sound waves instead of being, you know, one solid directional and branch out into like a spread shot. And it was really cool like that. But yeah, Project S11 cover art wise looked like crap, and it really wasn't.
Godzilla 2's art looked like fucking amazing, but a lot of people hate it. I would argue it's a good game, but most people hate that.
There's something deep within you about this fucking Godzilla 2, isn't there? This is the second time you brought this up tonight.
Is it?
And I've heard heard you bring this up before.
I was going to say, I've heard this on other podcasts.
You have unnerving dreams about Godzilla 2, don't you?
I want it, but I'm not going to pay that money for it. And if I had it, I would probably end up selling it just because it's worth a price that I'm not willing to have a piece of plastic for.
How much does it go for?
About it's 80 like to 80 100.
Something, 80 to 100 loose. I saw a sealed copy sell for $1,200.
Shit.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Nope.
Ooh, that's a bit rich for me.
Yeah. Well, the listener can't see this, but I'm going to pass this around. This is some of my favorite cover art.
Oh, yeah. This is awful.
A Famiclone cover art.
Oh, yeah.
Captivates our super wonderful Mario.
Super wonderful Mario. This definitely looks like a bootleg.
Help remind me when I publish this. I want to see if I can find a good scan of that.
There's and put this it as castle the embarking architecture.
I got a scanner.
It looks like those, you know, cone.
You actually put that
like
game.
The Russian castle architecture.
Oh, yeah. It's like a Tetris castle dumped on top of
shitty
a pile
red
of
serpents.
Shit.
There's
that
Mario
game. You put that in a Famicom and boot it up, it boots up as Super Mario 2.5.
Oh my god!
And then it's random. It sometimes like two it'll boot up and say Super Mario 7.
What?
That is fucking.
Sometimes when you boot this game up, we're talking about Super Wonderful Mario. It's a Famiclone bootleg copy I got. You boot this up, it's Super Mario 2. But sometimes when you load it, it'll say Super Mario 2.5, and then other times you load it, it'll say Super Mario Brothers 7.
What the fuck?
So, I don't know. Thank you,
Chinese Famiclone bootlegs.
Taiwan for making a Famiclone cassette.
Oh my god, it does say that.
Yeah, it does.
It says cassette
on the back
label.
Yeah, it's on the back.
It's a purple
the unique
shell
manufacturer.
Plastic cartridge.
This is what it says on the back of my bootleg Famicom cartridge. The unique manufacturer adopting high class IC and process by not oxidized gold plate on the apparatus to protect your IPU.
That's not even a coherent sentence.
Wow. And then it remarks, since this is a sophisticated apparatus, should avoid to operate or to store under extreme temperature. Also, avoid violent bumps if necessary. Moreover, never disassemble it. The reasons causing defaults are touching the end filled by hands or cleaning by wet materials.
That's some...
What the fuck?
That's some fantastic English right there. English?
Thank you, Super Wonderful Mario.
It's like tourist tips you get from traveling in Taiwan and messing with the ladies of the evening.
I guess...
violent bumps.
From our answers, or from our question, though, we do have a call.
Yeah, we do.
Our good buddy, Bill.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Yeah.
Just, I want to say that. Bill's a good fan.
You'll be getting your lame game of the week in the mail any day now. So,
here's Bill's call.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Bill. I just wanted to answer the question. As far as why I love retro gaming more than gaming nowadays, is one of the biggest things is, you know, to have a multiplayer game, you don't sit and hide behind an anonymous name now. Or, well, then you did it. Now you do. You know, back then, if you wanted to have a multiplayer game, you actually sat on
get the floor with over.
Your boys. You played games, chips everywhere, Mountain Dew everywhere, and so on. But that's one of the biggest beefs I have with gaming nowadays. I mean, I love it, don't get me wrong, but there's something about the nostalgia factor of doing that, you know, having those game all night sleepovers, you know, stuff like that. Things like that don't happen anymore. It's all multiplayer nonsense. It's all hiding behind this anonymous name. You get no real social interaction. But that's one of my biggest beefs. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Dude, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Totally.
And yeah. I say this, and our listeners might not like me saying this, but I had a recent experience like this because we couldn't figure out how to set the server up due to whatever issues. Fucking Minecraft. My buddy Josh has been coming over. We've been playing local Minecraft. I fucking enjoy that. It makes me think about somebody coming over and playing Nintendo again, you know. And it is fucking Minecraft. Whatever.
Minecraft's good.
I like it. I catch a lot of flack for fucking liking Minecraft.
Most people
like,
really? Give a shit about it. Don't
the super
have it
popular.
Played it.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I think that's why I catch flack, though, is because I always bitch about these popular games I don't like. And I'm like, I actually enjoy Minecraft. I like sandbox games. I like games
Minecraft's
where I
good.
Can create
yeah.
and do whatever
popular
the fuck I want
because it is
to.
Good. Just because a lot of little kids like it don't make it bad. It just means it's, you know,
well,
it's accessible.
I'm just getting at, like, you know, I catch a lot of flack and... Me and Josh, like Josh physically, I have Minecraft Realms so we can play online, but he physically brought his computer over, set up right there, and we sat here and played. You know, you don't fucking, you don't do that anymore. And I miss that because that's one of my favorite things. Like, you know, your parents back in the day are like, oh, you can go watch a movie or you can go stay at your grandparents this weekend or you can just stay at home and have a friend come over. We'll buy you a pizza and rent you a game. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Like, right. You don't, you know, I'm 30 years old. I can't just readily come, but hey, Brandon, leave your wife and children and come over here and let's play fucking video games. Or let me come over and impose on your wife and children and play video games. You can't do that anymore, you know? Yeah. So when you do get to do it, like, whether you're playing fucking Minecraft or whether you're playing fucking a television or Turbo, whatever, you know?
Yeah,
I agree with Bill completely. That's one thing I fucking miss. Yeah. It's just like
local couch co-op.
Yeah, it's fine to play online multiplayer, but it's so much better when your buddy's sitting here fucking beside you playing it. You know,
yeah.
So and you know that's one of the things. Like I said before, I like MMOs a lot, but the whole anonymity factor of it, like some people, it'll burn my ass when these assholes get on there talking all the shit. And it's not because of what they're saying. It's not that. It's that they're fucking cowards and wouldn't dare have the fucking balls to say this shit to my face in real life.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's what gets me.
I mean, like...
Keyboard warriors, man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Part of the problem is the developers and the way they're making the games now. They need to make more multiplayer-based games for home. Not all. Yeah. I don't want to sit there and play this.
You know,
shit.
It's weird. Well, go ahead and finish.
Oh, no. You carry on.
Okay.
Trust me.
Well, see, this is weird because, you know, around 2000, I got into PC gaming, like, solely. And PC gaming back then, multiplayer on that was all online. That's all we could find for the longest. And now consoles have gone to where they're almost always online.
Yeah.
And PC games, more and more, are local multiplayer.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of a weird switch there. But
it's kind of a big flip.
Yeah.
On both ends.
It was like a LAN party thing, you know, when we were younger.
Yeah.
That's popular again.
Yeah.
You know, like versus with people with computers.
Yeah.
Versus people with consoles.
I find it really strange when I get a new game and it says, you know, two to four co-op multiplayer. And I'm like, oh, sweet. And it's like online only. And I'm like,
yeah.
It's two player co-op, but online only?
Yep.
What the hell? Where's the local?
You're canceling that shit out.
Yeah.
Why don't you make that online only?
Like I mentioned in Crawl, it's local only. I think I've seen people bitch about it not being online. I'm like, I wouldn't play this game online with people. This is a game you play with your fucking friends in your living room. So when you kill them as the human, you get to rub it in their fucking faces.
Well, it's like Nidhogg.
Nidhogg is amazing.
I bought Nidhogg recently.
Yeah.
You know, and was wondering about. Online multiplayer, you will be lucky to play on PC and get in multiple matches online and not. And, you know, that just, that game, I've played it online versus, you know, I've played it with you and Juice and everybody, and it's much more fun when you got a room full of people.
Oh, yeah.
All around playing the shit.
It's the kind of game you would get frustrated with playing online
even,
with somebody.
Even though it's on the PlayStation 4, you're hard-pressed to find somebody to play it.
Like that. I'm definitely bringing when and if we do the next Game Fest, that tournament's Nidhogg coming will back. Be, that was one of the funnest tournaments we had.
I even joined in on that first time ever playing it and was just like, what the fuck? This is amazing. But it sucks ass at the same time. Well, I guess that's it for our questions. Thank you for the call, Bill. We need a new question.
We also need a winner for our game. Hmm. It's only two to choose from. Flip the bottle cap.
Flip the cap.
Heads, Lynn gets it. Tails, Bill gets another game.
Shit. My drunk ass can't even flip it.
Tails.
All right, Bill, you got you another game.
Shit, Bill.
Be mailing you something else. Yeah.
What we?
Two-time champ.
What we mailing this week? We mailing...
What we got? What we got?
We got NBA Jam on Super Famicom, or we got Jim Power on Super Nintendo.
Send him Jim Power. I don't know if he's got a Famicom.
Yeah, you gotta do all that headache. Okay, you got Jim Power coming your way, Bill.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Your input... See? Take advice from fucking Bill. All you gotta do is answer a goddamn question, and you could win a free game.
Yeah.
You didn't do shit, so guess what? Bill's got two games, and you got a handful of not shit. Congratulations on being a fucking loser. Pull the Schlossberg out, put it in your mouth, click the trigger. Easy. Fuck you. Sorry. I'm about drunk, and I just got mad because nobody answered our goddamn question.
Well, it's Facebook's fault, mostly.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me take all the back. Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, you can suck a fuck, put a Schlossberg in your mouth, pull the trigger, leave me the rights to Facebook.
We need a new question.
Yes, we do.
You have the ye old pause button?
The ye old pause button? I guess we're going to be, since it's customary, for a guest to come up with the question. Chasen, give us our question.
Yep.
All right, my question for the week is, What game series really let you down that was based off of a franchise? Which games were originally based off of a movie, comic, cartoon, TV show, whatever? As long as it was not originally a video game series. What really let you down
external
as a fan
series.
Of a comic book or a movie or something?
Oh, I got such a concrete answer for this right now.
I do too.
But we will reveal it next week.
I was a big fan of some things, and then when video games came out for it, I got burnt buying those video games.
I mean, how does that truly make you feel, though, knowing that a video game ruins something for you? The thing that we like more than anything still has that ability to just shit all over you. Sucks.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Well...
We'd be wrapping up.
I guess that's about it, right?
Yeah.
I guess the only thing we have to do before we go is I got some gifts to dish out to you all.
Snap.
I'm a big fan of Loot Crate and stuff like that, and, Arcade Block. And so another thing I've subscribed to over the internet is IndieBox. They make physical editions, usually collector's editions of digital-only games. And... They make them physical. So not only are they available for Mac and PC, but they stuff them full of action figures and papercraft and soundtracks on CD
Fun
and stuff
shit.
Like that. So I've got three games for you three guys here. So
awesome.
I'm gonna let you all pick which games you want. I'm not gonna like say, hey, Lyle, you're stuck with this game. And I'm giving David this one, though.
Hey, do we have the option to have a knife fight over them?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, sweet.
Dude, I got so many knives. I would be honored to knife fight any of you gentlemen. Fucked into
Can I bring my AR-15 in the situation?
Knife fight.
Shit.
We're not...
We're gentlemen. Okay.
Disclaimer, we're not sponsored
by
Indie Game or Indie Box or anything like that. I'm not sponsored
by Indie Box. But we're free agents now, so.
We are free agents.
If you're listening.
Rest in peace, Vault. Help us out.
I'm just a personal fan of IndieBox. So if you guys, I'm not getting paid for it. Just go out there and check out IndieBox.
Dude, seriously,
you guys will like this stuff.
You didn't have to do this, but thank you very much. Thank you.
You guys are welcome. Man. You guys make a really awesome podcast. So I just want to do something special. No sweat off my back. Yeah.
Well, thank you, man.
Yeah.
We're very appreciative.
I'm glad you all appreciate it. So you guys can knife fight over it, but I've got three games here physical. I have all of these games for you people that were late to not getting the IndieBox subscription. You can get all these games on Steam and PlayStation 4 digital download. To check them out yourselves as far as the games themselves go. You're going to have a good time with all three of these games. I have physical editions here, complete with all sorts of extras. First game is Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. You have this giant spacecraft, and it's kind of like Fallout Shelter, where you can have like a living room sort of house going on inside of a giant spacecraft, but it's kind of free roaming where you can go to different planets and shoot stuff and aliens and other spacecraft.
That's kind of cool.
But it's got a good story, nice soundtrack and stuff like that. So it's Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, plus a lot of physical extras. So you and Lyle and Brandon and David can fight for that one. That's the first IndieBox there.
I'll see what else is coming for us.
Better not hold too tight, David. We'll tear your arms off this motherfucker.
Bring it on, motherfucker. Hey,
you want that?
I believe that was February's IndieBox for fans of IndieBox there. I held on to Nuclear Throne from January. That's the one sitting in my house right now from Devolver Digital. The next one I have is Gallic Z. It's Gallic Dash Z, not that Galax is a word. Galaxy the Dimensional. This one comes with a really sweet like action figure there. One of the
I love action figures.
Yeah. It looks pretty awesome. It's got an official soundtrack.
Dude,
in it
I'm
and
so
whatnot.
Getting my knife out.
That one there is definitely.
I don't have a knife, but I got a pen.
This one's definitely like a space shooter versus space shooter. It's kind of free roaming in the sense of like asteroid or a lunar lander or something like that. But it's way more in depth, you know. But you as spaceships take shots at each other and stuff, and we're really mechs, you know.
Nice.
So that's another one for y'all to fight over there.
Look at it.
Take a look at that thing. That's a really cool action.
I'm gonna look at it.
It looks very Gundam,
Brandon,
you know.
It does.
You better look, boy.
He's like, I'll just take that motherfucker right there.
Yeah. Yeah. All of these indie boxes I'm mentioning are temporarily on indie boxes online store for a very limited time. Go ahead and grab them if you're not subscribed and you missed them. They're on their shop. Go ahead and grab them. If you guys just want the game, again, it's on PlayStation 4.
The art of Lovers reminds me a lot of Adventure Time.
It does look like that.
That is pretty damn cool.
But it's definitely not like the show and gameplay.
I figured.
And that one is local couch co-op. You don't have to mess around with online or anything like that. So for fans of local couch co-op games, kind of in the space stuff, shooters, Lovers, and a space time. Dangerous space time. Yeah. The last and final box I have here is Assault Android Cactus. This was recently up for Game of the Month on PlayStation Network in March, but it got beat out by Broforce. Broforce is awesome.
Yeah,
but Assault Android Cactus is as well, too. It plays like a top-down shooter, like, say, Smash TV, Robotron 2084.
Oh, damn.
But it's also Bullet Hell at the same time for fans of cave made games.
Bullet Hell.
So, top-down twin-stick shooter / Bullet Hell. Android Assault Cactus, physical box PC edition. I got that for you all to fight over, too. From IndieBox.
Damn, this is going to be a rough one, because I'm interested in all three of these games.
I think I want the Cactus.
Fantastic games.
I think I'm going to stab you with my knife.
We could have a knife fight, or we could have
a bro fight.
That too. Or rock, paper, scissors, the true battle.
If you guys are sold on spending your money, not only can you look these gameplay footage up on YouTube, but if you look them up on PlayStation Network Store, they have the trailers up. So you can take a look at exactly what these games look like as far as Galaxy and Assault Android Cactus and
dude, I'm honestly completely fine with a random game. If you want to paper rock scissors over the shit, I'm completely down. We can do it right now.
God, we need video of this exciting match.
God damn, we do. But we don't have video.
Nope.
No.
Good news is
let's just audio rock paper scissors. Yeah. The fans can hear it right here, right now.
Yep.
Jason, thank you so much. You didn't have to bring all this, but it is amazing.
It's not a problem. You guys make a solid podcast, excellent. So this is my thanks back to you guys.
This is much great. Thanks. We're most appreciative. This is amazing.
Great.
Okay.
Glad you like
it. What are we going to rock, paper, scissors for first?
David, are you getting in on this?
What do you want, David? David, you're in on this.
So we're going to take turns. It's going to be like a mini tournament.
I'm kind of after that one.
Oh, you fuck. That's
kind of it's my, got a toy with it.
Honestly, I kind of want the first one.
Lovers?
Yeah.
I kind of want Lovers.
Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time. That is a really neat looking game.
Well, I mean, if we all take the coordinates, then it's just going to be
We ain't going to rock, paper, scissors. Shit.
We can rock, paper, scissors anyway.
By the way, in my
okay, account. I want Lovers. You can have Cactus. You can have this one. We're still rock, paper, scissors. Just to I want to see who the ultimate wits is.
There you go.
Oh, shit.
I'm by the way, these are all Windows PC because that was my default in my account settings.
Windows is great.
So Windows guys,
we have no Apple shit here.
Great. Me either. I don't like Apple.
We don't pick apples. We don't do that bullshit.
The loser of rock, paper, scissors.
As far as apples, if you want to donate a old school... Like Macintosh,
like Apple II, 8.5-inch floppy.
Apple II would be great because I have a shit ton of Apple II games and nothing to play them on.
I love that. Would be amazing. Number Munchers, Word Munchers, and what was it? Super Bunny, I like
Super Bunny. Lemonade Chip Stand. And
they had Lemonade some. Stand. They had some McGee. Game on McGee Apple II on DOS, that me and Brandon played in first grade, and I can't remember
The elevator one.
Math Blaster
and Miss Heatherly's, where you had the map and you could put tornadoes.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember that shit? I don't remember what it was, but you could make your own weather maps. Me and Brandon used to be like, let's just send a tornado to Alabama. Fuck all these people.
That's the kind of shit I used to do. I used to get in trouble in class for not trying an Oregon Trail and just blasting all the buffalo and dying of dysentery because I was playing Wolfenstein 3D at the time. I was just all about killing shit.
You know? Oregon Trail, Jesus Christ. We need to do a whole episode on Oregon Trail. Okay. Rock, paper, scissors.
Are you going on shoot or?
Shoot, yeah.
Rock, paper.
Rock,
paper. Loser licks buttholes.
There's got to be some stakes in this. Wait a minute.
Whoa.
Whose butthole am I licking? Yours?
Melissa McCarthy.
In general.
Okay.
Winner gets an asshole licking.
It's me and Brandon first. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Oh.
Oh, paper and paper, son. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Oh,
Brandon wins. Damn. Brandon Gentry.
Scissors.
You want in? You want to fight the champ?
Do it. Oh, do it. Beat the champ. David. Rock. Paper. What the fuck?
You're like, raw. All right, let's go.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Fuck.
Yeah! Brandon, two times.
Brandon's too good at games. Brandon. You don't want to fuck with him.
He is the retro master here.
There's no game more retro than rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, I was going to say, so retro. No, it's just hand games there.
It's like the ultimate retro.
Well, now this shit's over. I'm going to go play on the road. No.
You got the one you wanted.
Yeah, Galaxy, man. You got I'm taking neck figure with
Lovers.
It.
Is that
it Lovers? Yeah. Lovers in the Dangerous Space.
I'll tell you Lovers.
Yeah. It looks pretty fucking cool.
Hey, it's I'm awesome, cool with
man.
That.
Assault Android Cactus to
Dude, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so
yeah,
much.
That's cool as shit, y'all
are
man.
Welcome. Y'all are that's absolutely awesome. Welcome. Y'all are a bunch of cool motherfuckers, so I think this is the least I can do to pay back.
I'm going to have cool to, I'm gonna have to buy basis. This, the digital version, and not open this.
That's what I did with Nuclear Throne. I bought that on Steam and PS4, and I've got Nuclear Throne sitting on my shelf sealed. Big Devolver Digital fan. I loved, you know, Serious Sam, and I'm a Broforce fan. I can't be a bigger fan of anything else than Hotline Miami 1 and 2. Hotline Miami and Hotline Miami 2, wrong number.
I'm going to do everything in my power to put Broforce in my arcade cabinet.
Hey,
yeah.
You get a Steam key.
Broforce is the shit. Actually, Devolver Digital has a... Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you guys. They have keys in these boxes because they knew you guys were collectors because that's why you would subscribe to IndieBox in the first place. Yeah. So you don't have to open these.
Oh, that's great.
So go ahead and download those codes and keep these motherfuckers on the shelves if you...
That's
can hold awesome. Yourselves back from playing with the toys inside.
Oh, dude, it's going on the shelf right now.
Yeah.
Well, when I stand up.
Standing up sucks.
It does when you're this drunk.
I totally forgot that they printed the codes on the outside. Yeah. Don't have to open them.
So now you
cool as shit.
You gotta buy it again.
Yeah. I'm actually after the physical copy of Axiom Verge that they did.
Thanks,
I would love a copy of that. That's so rare. I actually seen today only one copy on eBay for $329.
Which one?
Ooh. Axiom Verge. Cool. Made by one guy over very many years.
That's still PS4 only, ain't it?
Yeah, I think PS4. I think that's the only console.
That is what reason why I haven't had my hands on
it. It might be on Xbox One, but I really doubt it.
I think it's been exclusive for PS4.
I do too, yeah. But yeah, check out XM Verge, guys. Yeah, it's good too. It's like a kind of Metroidvania. But yeah, I'm glad you all like these. I have one on the... I'm still subscribed. I have two indie box. I have another one on the way to me in the mail. They just sent me an email today saying it shipped for Dust and Elysian Tale, a big on 360 and PlayStation 3 and PS4.
Nice, yes.
So the winner of the question of the week this week will not be getting one of your guys' retro lame games. It'll be Dust and Elysian Tale from IndieBox.
Oh shit.
So you guys really better fucking call
that's Good Bill.
Old Gamer Podcast number this time. You know what will happen if you don't. Vagina's turning to stone and
we
whatnot.
Will play that yeah. clip for you next. So actually, while we're at it, just real quick, just so you know, if you call our number, you answer our questions, you could win some free games.
Yep.
And
that's what happens when Max forces the sponsor now.
That's good. This is what you need to do, and this is the number you need to call. 682-777 good. That's all you gotta do.
Physical PC boxed sealed edition
good stuff.
Of Dust, guys. Come on.
Answer that fucking question. You know you should. Gives us wood. That's all that matters. Well, we're winding to the end of this shit.
It's been a long one.
It has been a long one. Very long one. We're at 3 hours right now.
Holy crap. So, 3 hours.
Enjoy it. Anywho, check us out at goodoldgamers.com. You can reach us as always at our Facebook, Good Old Gamers Podcast. On Twitter, Good Old Gamers, Stitcher, iTunes, all that shit. You know the drill. We're on all that. YouTube, all that bullshit.
Subscribe to us on Google Play. Keep us number one.
Google Play. We're number one. Keep us there.
Yep.
Fucking do it. If you don't do it, then fuck you. That's all all there is to say. Well, you guys know the last words we say on the show, right?
Absolutely.
David, you look a little confused there. God damn it.
I'm fucking tired too.
I'm pretty sure everybody
they remember now that she reminded them.
If you don't remember now, God damn it, you'll end tonight. Anyway.
It will be your game over.
Yes. Yeah, it will be your game over.
Big time.
Man. Anywho, check us out on all that shit. And as you know how we say, Jason and David, sign us off.
In the words of Bill Paxton,
game over, man.
Game over. It might be better if I can find the outro.
Please don't go. The drones need you. They look up to you.